on the download, Chicago treasurer Kurt Summers. From the movie Crown Heights, Colin Warner and Namdi Asamoah. And Chicago's stand-up comedian Kelsey Huff. And now, here's your host, a man who wore his best back-to-school outfit, Justin Kaufman.
That's right, I got my high tops. Couldn't get the Nikes. Mom wouldn't splurge for the Nikes, so got off-brand. It's off-brand. It's spiky. It's two for one. Welcome to the download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman with you till 11 o'clock tonight. Great to be back here broadcasting live from the Allstate Showcase Studio in this beautiful city of Chicago. I mean, what a time to be alive, right? September, it's starting to get a little chill in the air. Let's get this for the next 3 months, right? And broadcasting right here on Michigan Avenue, beautiful city of Chicago, nothing like it. Thanks to everybody holding down the mic. Well, we were gone on vacation. Pete and I were both gone. Not together. We don't vacation together. And we both had the week off. We'll talk about that later in the show. Today is also the first day of school for Chicago. My son back to school. Stephanie made the reference to back to school clothing. He does not care. Going into middle school, doesn't care. Everyone said, well, what are you going to wear? What are you thinking about? We got a special shirt? No. Walked down today with his crummy old Minecraft t-shirt. The mismatched brown and blue shorts. I'm like, what are you doing? It's the first day. At least put some gel in your hair. It's also the first day for parents to get back at it. There's a lot of head nods in the hallway. I'm dropping them off. Hey, you. Hey, buddy. You don't know anyone's name. But you recognize their face enough to get a head nod going. That's at least give the kids credit. They get name tags and like, this is where you're supposed to sit. And at the beginning, there's roll call. Parents don't get that. We just kind of get reminiscent. And if anyone changes anything, anyone puts a beard on, maybe changes a hairstyle, you're out. Forget it. I don't know you. City's way too big. We got a great show lined up tonight. It's great to be back here on WGN. I'm excited for tonight. Tonight, city treasurer, Chicago treasurer, Kurt Summers. Gonna be my guest at the big table. It's been a while. We've wanted to get him on. Glad to have him on. Today is the actual first day for signatures for the petitions for running for governor. So we'll talk with Kurt Summer, who was early. There are a lot of people thinking he was going to run for governor, and he did not. And he threw his name behind J.B. Pritzker. So we'll talk with Kurt Summers about his political future, but also about his job as Chicago treasurer. I had no idea what treasurers did. When I think treasurers, I think like, you know, Al, who was the treasurer of the Little League. You know, he's the one who held the money. He had the gray box with the lock, right? The key. No, this is a high risk, high return investments, portfolios, and of course, economic development. So we'll talk with him about the job. And what he sees for the future of Chicago's finances. It's coming up at 8 o'clock. Also tonight, as we mentioned, as I mentioned with Roe and Anna, we are going to talk with Namdi Asamoah, who is the former NFL cornerback, who's now turned actor and producer. He produced the Sundance Award-winning film, Crown Heights, which is in select theaters now. It's a story of Colin Warner, a real-life story about a man in Brooklyn who was accused and charged, and he was... I mean, he was found guilty of murder, served 21 years of a life sentence before they figured out he wasn't the guy. He maintained his innocence, and that's one of these stories that's playing out as we speak in the Chicago Tribune. You see the story today about witnesses recanting and so forth. So we'll talk with Namdi, but also Colin Warner, who the story is based on. The film is based on his life. He is in studio. Colin Warner and Namdi Asamoah. So there you go. And we'll play the worst tonight. How about it? We also got the download on Chicago Business coming up. Every time we do that segment, people say to me, they go, the number one thing is people. Chicago has great people, great talent. You have to have great talent. Tonight, we talk about that talent. And also how they get it. Human capital. The Business of Human Capital, and Downloading Chicago Business coming up after 7:30. News, weather, and traffic with Rob Martyr, Esmeralda Leon. Production provided by Pete Zimmerman. I'm Justin Kaufman, and this is The Download, a show about Chicago starring those who know it well. All right, we'll come back. We'll do the carryout. Stay with us. All right, it's The Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. It's time for the carryout. This, of course, our nightly segment where I read the news, so you at home, you don't have to. All right, here are today's top stories. Attorney General Jeff Sessions announced that the Trump administration is rescinding DACA, the Obama administration executive order that gave protections to people who were born illegally in this country. This is a big deal and affects over 800,000 people nationwide, and sometimes says about 50,000 here in Chicago. Why such a big deal? Well, this executive order was designed to give a pathway to children who grew up in this country and, as Obama said it, are American in every way, but on paper. Now Sessions in the White House defend the decision by saying that they believe there's a right way to do this, and it's not through executive order, but more through Congress. Oh, I didn't know this was about parliamentary procedure. Should have said so. Must remember that for later. The one part that's a PR nightmare is that for people that get on this said pathway, they had to come out of the shadows and register. So what happens now? Those same people who were reserved and didn't trust the government now find their fears justified? I mean, the Trump administration has a list. I'm not the one to wade into the argument over dreamers or whether or not there should be a pathway for those who come to this country illegally. But I do empathize with these people knowing they have some serious fears about being kicked out of the country, the only country they've ever known. I just hope that we don't see this come to fruition. I'm okay with Congress setting new rules, but I'm not okay with the government going after registered dreamers. And so far, both sides of the aisle tend to agree. So at least we're all on the same page, right? Also, I get it, protest. But blocking expressways, diverting traffic at rush hour, at the Burn interchange, now that's cruel. It's back to school for Chicago Public Schools and for the suburban schools. Geez, they're already dipping into the ancillary supplies, opening up that second package of glue sticks and dry erase markers. It may be the first day back for Chicago students, but that doesn't mean there can't be some controversy. Some parents were met with protests as they dropped their kids off today, mostly over budget cuts, but I was listening to education reporter Linda Lutton, and she said that one of the schools on the Southwest side has 10 incoming freshmen. 10! As we hear more and more of these stories of declining enrollment and the death of neighborhood schools, get ready for the moratorium on school closings to be lifted. A full freshman class, 10 kids. Wow. With the monster debt and the mounting pension costs, could we be in line for another mass school closing in the near future? Something to think about. I, for one, can't wait for all the high schools to close and be turned into cool school-themed condos. Ooh, is that granite countertops and an authentic overhead projector? Yeah, sixth grade algebra. It's really nice. Houston continues the massive cleanup after Hurricane Harvey, and now word that a new Hurricane Irma, is moving west towards Florida at Category 5 strength. If the predictions are correct, still an if, the hurricane could hit Miami, turn up the eastern coast of Florida, and hit Georgia and the Carolinas on its way back out to sea. I don't know how many pairs of khakis and USA ball caps the president has. All kidding aside, hurricanes are the worst, right? We all agree on that? The only hope at this point is that the hurricane decides to cycle out to sea short of the coast, or that North Korea shoots a missile at it. That could work too. Two birds, right? Speaking of weather, nice chilly September day. I'll take it. Like I said, 3 months of this. We get a little frost around Thanksgiving. Nice little light snow around Christmas. And then mild for the rest. We're back to the summer. You heard it here first. In sports, well, it's here. The first week of the 2017-2018 season for the Chicago Bears. The regular season kicks off on Sunday against the Falcons at Soldier Field. The Falcons coming off one of the worst collapses in sports histories after their loss in the Super Bowl. But the Bears, well, hard to collapse when they got nothing to stand on. The Bears aren't going to start. The Bears are going to start Mike Glennon on Sunday. Trubisky did well in camp, but not well enough to unseat Glennon, who kind of looks like a seventh grader who sprouted up over the summer. Man, you got tall. What else? The Bears have a tough start to the season. Listen to this. Falcons, Buccaneers, Steelers. Then the Packers, Vikings, Ravens, and Panthers. So, yeah. There we go. Good to know. But the good news, Pernell McPhee made the 53-man roster, so the goal is to get him back on the field for week one. Coach Fox told reporters he's in the best shape he's ever been in his life. Well, yeah, because you got to skip training camp. Also, Kyle Long and linebacker Danny Trevathan are also cleared to practice, and they could start on Sunday. How about it, though? They haven't played a regular season game yet, and three big-name stars are questionable. Oh, wait, my bad. Probable. I think they need a new category for injured players. Anticipated. They're anticipated, right? We anticipate them playing sometime soon. How about that? The Bears are lucky to get some cover from the Cubs. The Cubs have lost two in a row, but they still have a 3.5-game lead over the Brewers. Cubs are looking more and more like a playoff lock, but not sure what that means with teams like the Dodgers, Nationals, and now the Diamondbacks. Just raking. And now we wait on news of Jake Arrieta, who may have pulled a hammy yesterday, was pulled early. If he can't go or can't be lights out, it might spell trouble for the Cubs. But then again, we're talking about the World Series champs and what looks to be a third straight trip to the playoffs for the squad. So, you know what? That's unfathomable for the Cubs. So even if it's an early exit, awesome. Made it to the playoffs. On the South side, prospects Lucas Giolito and Ronaldo Lopez turning heads this August as the Sox play spoiler, or at least try to. Yoan Moncada back tonight from his shin splints. The Indians are in town again. They've won 12 in a row. The Sox are still the worst in the entire American League. But the good news, the Sox were able to ship Miguel Gonzalez for prospects last week. Yum, 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 yum. You know that way that baseball is able to trade after the trading deadline? You know that thing where they call it clearing waivers, but it's really just trading, right? I mean, stop acting like it's not. It kind of drives me crazy. They're like, oh, he cleared waivers and Justin Verlander was traded. Well, I thought it was trading deadline passed. Also today, Derek Holland released from the White Sox. So what's that mean for the prospect monster? Yeah, nothing? We got nothing?
Still hungry.
How about the first week of college football, huh? Wins for the local teams, Northwestern, Illinois, and Notre Dame. Notre Dame's got Georgia next week. They win that one, and, well, they could be 2-0. So there's that. And finally tonight, Nintendo released a new bio for their main character, Mario. Yep, if you didn't know Mario from Mario Brothers, his first name is Mario and his last name is Mario, too. That's cool. The iconic character who, alongside his brother Luigi, are two Italian plumbers who constantly save the princess. But according to the new bio, Mario is no longer a plumber. Yep, he's moved on to all-around hip dude. My guess is that Mario probably took a tech job at the startup, never looked back. I mean, cool key cards. I mean, all you can drink cold brew coffee. The cool desk that you can write on. I mean, you know how he no longer has to fight Bowser. Instead, he can design PowerPoints on how to defeat Bowser. 2017, man. That's the carryout for September 5th, 2017. Hey, we have a free back-to-school special. It's ranch dressing, ketchup, and salt packets. Free lunch. What are you complaining about? All right, coming up, download on Chicago Business. Very excited to talk about headhunting, staffing, and the tech world of human capital. That's coming up here after the 7 o'clock news, 7:30 news. Stay with us. All right, Rob Martier, how are you, my friend?
Oh, man, doing well. How about you?
I'm doing good, man. Good. I had a couple days off. Feeling good.
Welcome back.
Did some mini golfing.
How was the, oh, nice.
Yeah, real strong. Nice. I was going under par for probably the first time in my life. I mean, really like Tiger Woods style here. And then at the end of we went to the Par King up in Lincolnshire. And the end is like a Russian roulette kind of hole where you just hit it in there and it's almost like a roulette table. And
yeah, did you get the
five.
Oh.
And so ruined my par. It's been stuck with me for like, that was like on Tuesday. It's been a week.
I like when you get the free game.
Yeah, right. I would have taken a free game.
The lights and buzzers go off and everything.
Right.
Now, do they still have the Sears Tower one, or excuse me, the Willis Tower one, where you have to get it into the elevator and the ball goes up? And
yeah. And the whole I love that whole park. That's so fun.
It is fun.
Yeah.
Are these just baby steps into getting into real golf? You try the mini first?
Well, mini, I just think that I'm just going to concentrate on getting really good at mini. They're two different games. They should call it something else. Putt-putt, right?
Yeah. Is there a tour for that?
It starts right here.
I mean, they have
right?
competitive eating. I mean, you know.
Right. They probably do, right?
Sure.
They probably do have competitive mini golfing.
Cool, man.
Yeah.
Welcome back.
Yeah, you have to pay to watch that, I'll bet. That's the only thing I had a problem with is there's like a couple courses, and every time you want to go, let's do another one, and you had to pay again.
Yeah.
This is a lot of money to hit a little ball for 20 minutes. Anyway, all right.
It's business time. It's business. It's business time. I don't know what you're trying to say. You're trying to say it's time for business. It's business time. Ooh, it's business.
It is. It's time for the download on Chicago Business, sponsored by Signature Bank here on 720 WGN. It's our weekly segment featuring Chicago-based CEOs and entrepreneurs sharing their stories so we can better understand ours. In the first couple months of doing this segment, I've heard time and time again from my guests that the key to growth and success is people, especially in the tech sector. We've talked with startup entrepreneurs who have outright bragged about the talent pool here in the Chicago area. Why is that the case? What is it about the Chicago area that produces and retains great talent for the emerging tech industry? My guest tonight has built her business on that very premise. Rana Bori is the CEO of Instant Alliance, a firm that specializes in placing thousands of employees in the Chicago tech scene. Founded in 2001, the business has received several accolades, and Rana herself has been named to several lists honoring the top women entrepreneurs in the country. And she is my guest tonight, the Download in Chicago Business, here to talk about her career, but also the business of human capital. Rana, thanks for being here. Good to meet you.
Oh, my God. Thank you so much. I'm, like, jacked up and excited to be here with you tonight,
well,
Justin.
Well, let's talk about Instant Alliance. You've had different names for the company over time, but it is a recruiting firm for the tech industry. Where did this idea come from?
Actually, about 20 years ago, I know this is going to sound kind of odd, I met someone on a street corner who was in technology and in the recruitment business. And of course, I was waiting to go see 90210 when that was popular, and that may age me a little bit this evening. But I went to work with for them, and the guy was a technologist, and he trained me on technology every single night. So not only did I learn recruiting, but I learned technology. And that's how I started in the business. I went to work for a big global competitor. I did very well at a young age. And, you know, it was just time to go out on my own and start out of the second bedroom of my condo.
There you go. What attracts you to the idea of human capital, to the idea of recruiting and placing people in certain jobs?
You know what? I have always been really passionate about marrying the right talent with the right company. And I truly believe that human capital is the biggest differentiating factor in any organization. And getting talents that perform at like awesome levels is what I strive for. And being able to get the right people in and watch a company foster and grow and have them achieve their goals is just really cool. And I've been lucky to see that throughout my career. It's been an amazing, amazing ride.
Well, let's talk about that second room of the condo and making a move from working for global strategy companies or you know, someone else.
Yep.
And making that move to jump out and say, I can do this myself. I can create my own company. Take us through this step. Like, what was going through your mind in branching out on your own?
What the heck are you doing, Bori? You know, I left a very cush job with a big staff, and then all of a sudden it was literally me and my bulldog Henry in a room. I always say he did the filing. I talked to him every day. And honestly, I've talked about this in different podcasts and different interviews I've been in. I sat on a metal chair. So I knew if I was sitting on that chair and uncomfortable, I wasn't out with candidates and clients and making it happen.
Oh, interesting.
And
yeah.
In human capital, it's all about the relationships with the companies you work with the candidates that you place. And you have to be out there and personable and listening to people and getting to know them to be able to make this impact on
them. Now, I would just assume and that there are non-compete clauses for you to leave a job and start your own firm.
Yes,
to start from the ground up, to start from scratch, to it's great, and the philosophy of getting off the metal chair is great. But how do you get businesses to trust you to say, you know what, I'm going to go through at Instant Technology or Instant Alliance, what it is now, but how I'm going to go through this firm to help for my personnel needs.
Yeah, so I kind of got really lucky, I guess you can say. Sometimes people just fall on luck. So when I had worked for this big company, my last year, I had about 100 people working for me. I went out. This was of the time when you can get in a building. I hand-delivered checks. I knew who their kids were. I took a vested interest in these people. Then 9/11 hit, And shortly after that, I started my company. And all those people that I helped along the way, the whole candidate pool, they were all dispersed. They went to new organizations. Mm-hmm. They were hiring managers. They took new jobs. And because I took such a vested interest in them, they were like, oh, come here. Let me introduce you to my new hiring manager, my new company. So I kind of got really lucky because I did start from nothing. I did have that non-compete. I honored that non-compete. And I really, it was one placement at a time for me. And
but I mean, even as you said, I mean, the relationships are everything. I mean, the ability to have those relationships before you even started your company, they helped you. Along the way as you started to grow your own name and your own brand.
Yeah, relationships take time, and I got really lucky. I think a lot of people just focused on the companies, right? For me, it was kind of that opposite. I focused on the people, and really, if I couldn't place them that time, I followed up with them. I really looked at this as a long-term play, not a short-term fix. And I think as, I don't know if many people know, the staffing business, it's ultra competitive,
yeah,
right?
I was gonna say, yeah.
And I think that you have to differentiate yourself by building those relationships and getting those trust for your people. It's like anything else. And once people start to trust you, they want to help you. They want to work with somebody who can bring them great talent and that really understands their needs.
Well, Chicago has emerged and evolved as a tech industry. I mean, a town that became one in the last 5-10 years where it's become a cottage industry for Chicago. But before that, I mean, it had startups and had different places, but I mean, was it more difficult to place in the tech industry because there wasn't a centralized industry as we know it today?
I think tech has always been important in any company, right? But I think today, as opposed to companies looking at it as a cost center, it's what drives their business. The whole customer experience, the analytics, the big data, everything around how companies operate really runs off of technology.
So in the past, they're like, get a kid to do it. And now they're like, no, this needs to be the epicenter of what
it's
we do.
It's how businesses run today. It's totally different. So it was always busy, but now it's just going gangbusters. It's so cool to be in a town like Chicago where the people, the talent is loyal and they want to learn and they are all about networking and helping people. And it's not like that in other areas of the country like your Silicons or your Boston or different areas that had a leg up on us. I think today, Chicago is becoming that epicenter. Hmm. And so many of these organizations like 1871 and the Mayor's Council, how it started out, and TechStars, and it's just booming here like crazy, and you can't get enough good talent.
I was going to say, are you seeing more and more talent and people who want to work in Chicago come to Chicago that weren't from here that say, I'm going to come here and set up my life and set up shop here because there is an emerging industry?
Yeah, I think it's changing for sure. People who worked in these other areas of the countries and maybe grew up here. We just placed the number two person at Outcome Health. You know, she was originally from Chicago, Northwestern grad, went overseas, ran companies, and then came back, right? And we're seeing more and more of that. In conjunction with that, I think people's skills on the engineering side are really starting to foster and develop at a much rapid rate, whereas used to be able to have to go to recruit from Silicon Valley here. I think people are really starting to come into their own. And this has been a 3-4 year cycle now. So yeah. It's just awesome to see the energy in this town. It's amazing.
Rana Bori is the CEO of Instant Alliance. It's a firm that specializes in placing employees in the Chicago tech scene. She's my guest tonight at Download in Chicago Business. You know, I'm fascinated because I think when you think of someone who's founded a company and is a CEO, they're selling a product. And in this case, you're selling people. And you don't necessarily have control over those people. Meaning you could place me and I can go to a company and be like, I don't like it here, or I could mouth off, I could be a bad employee. But at the end of the day, you kind of lose control because they're not people that you've trained necessarily. They're people you're placing. Is that the biggest challenge for someone who is trying to recruit and also place people in an industry?
Yeah, I think it's one of the challenges, right, in this business is, you know, how do you deal with people that you can't control at the end of the day? They go in, they do a great interview, and then they go on site and they do something else. But for us, and at least for myself, right, and how we operate our firm, it's standing alongside your client and saying, all right, let's figure out the solution together. If that person isn't right, let's get you the right solution. Right. Where did we go wrong? And this business, it's a partnership. And the best firms really look at it as an extension of that company. You know, when we're recruiting or helping to build teams, honestly, I'm an extension. I look at myself as like an employee. I'm that invested in what they're doing to try to do it, to get the right people. And if that person isn't right, it's standing behind it and doing the right thing. And I think that's how I got into this business, or actually how I started, one of the reasons I started my own company. I had a guy who was on site, messed up. It was a big client. I'd been doing work with them. Actually, it was Arthur Anderson back in the day. Right. And I wanted to pay for the mistake. My firm didn't want to do it at the time. And I decided ultimately one of the reasons I started my firm is I felt like, you know what? The guy messed up. It was partly, you know, I placed them. I was alongside the client. We split the difference, and I actually paid out of pocket $25,000
really,
to make sure that that client was taken care of.
I mean, you talk about relationships, and that's it's interesting because you talk about the relationship to both the person that you're counting on to be placed, but also the relationship of the firms that you work with or the businesses that you work with, the client. You have to really be able to have relationships across the board. Like, you have to treat your business clients and partners in one way and be able to treat the talent in another. I mean, where does that skill, as a CEO and as someone who has to be the leader of your company, talk about that balance. Talk about making sure that is serviced.
I mean, I have no other choice, right? It's not only those two. It's actually the people who work for me as well internally in my operations. So it's like people everywhere, you know? And I always say sometimes I have a love-hate relationship because you can't control people and how they react or act. And so I don't know. I just got that really early on in my professional career. And I go above and beyond to make sure that we stand by our product. If our client needs something, we're out there. I just think you have to have unparalleled, you know, expertise in what you do and bring that to your clients. We don't advertise at all. Like, this is, you know, I don't get on
interesting.
Interviews very much. Right. And all of our business has been word of mouth, literally.
I'm fascinated, too, because the people that you're placing.
Yeah.
You know, we hear this a lot. There's a lot of stereotypes or types that are kind of thrown out about millennials or about younger people, and they want to jump from job to job or they want something right now. Do you see that being on the front line? Do you see a different way that the talent is approaching work in the way that they are looking at this as like a step? They're gonna get placed by you, and in 6 months, they're like, what else do you have?
Actually, yes, that does go on. But if you actually get the people in the right opportunity and they can see what their career growth is, they'll be more apt to stay longer. So we actually monitor our placements after they've been placed. And our average tenure is 2 years, which is pretty amazing. So we're getting people in jobs who are moving up the ranks. So you just got to be working. And what's that succession plan for that company? And tell us about it when we're sitting down with their executive leadership. And how do you plan on retaining these people? And a lot of companies don't really think about that. But when we come in and we partner, we start asking them these questions. Because we got to have this if these people are going to stay and want, you know, a career with your organization long term. Because you're right, it is tough. People are recruiting people left and right. And millennials know millennials. It doesn't matter. It's a tight industry here in Chicago.
How do you recruit? I mean, is there a list of the best employees out there? I was thinking like there's like a website you go to. And like
it's called our internal database. But honestly, I have a team of recruiters that's all they're responsible for.
And did they go out and do that, or are you waiting for people to come to you?
Oh, no. We go into companies, get to know these people. And like I said, this is not a short-term play. I've been working with engineers who might have went to a boot camp, didn't have any experience, and been tracking them 3 years later. And all of a sudden, you're right, they're no developer who's highly marketable, and they'll take my call. So I have about over, I would say, 200,000 candidates who've all been met, screened, taken a coffee in our database, have notes on them for years. You know, that's what makes us different and great is the fact that I've been able to capture that as well as marry it with building strong relationships. So those people take our calls. It's not about waiting for a guy to post on Career Builder. Like, we don't do any.
You don't do
it's
that.
All direct recruiting out of companies.
You know, as we wrap up, and I want to talk about your skills and your thoughts as a CEO and entrepreneur, my guest in studio, Rana Bori, she's the CEO of Instant Alliance, a firm that specializes in placing employees in the Chicago tech scene. She's my guest tonight on the Download in Chicago Business, sponsored by Signature Bank. You know, I want to ask you, I mean, running this company, it is a cutthroat business. And early on, before, you know, I mean, you talked about the days after when you started in your two-bedroom condo in the second room with your dog. And, I mean, it wasn't always sort of like, this is the best, this is going to take off. I mean, you had moments like a lot of entrepreneurs that I have on this segment where you were questioning yourself. I mean, talk about why you chose to move forward in this work as opposed to shelving it and trying something else.
You know, I was always very driven. And honestly, I can tell you, I had no set game plan or no business plan. I took a $100,000 loan from my dad that I paid off in a month. And quite honestly, I just kept going. Like, you don't know what you don't know. I always said if it was like Rana now, would I go do it back and do that? I was just fearless. I just picked up the phone and kept making it happen. And I knew I loved what I do. And it kind of just fell into place. I had some really hard years. I had some really great years. And at the end, you look back and look at your career over time. And I don't know, like my biggest mistakes I've learned the most from. And while you're in it, it sucks, I have to say. But if you can come out strong and be able to reflect on it and do it differently the next time, and there'll be a different mistake next time, right? Then, you know, you just kind of keep going.
For you, I mean, you've chose Chicago as the place to make your home, but also to serve and recruit and be a part of the tech industry here. Why Chicago? I mean, you mentioned other places, Boston, Silicon Valley. I mean, what is it about Chicago that keeps you here and that makes your company work?
You know what? It's the vibe in this town, and it's the people, right? I go back to it's always about the people, and I got to say, like, what's going on with all the innovation here, all the new kind of companies? People want to help each other out. Like, look at 1871, for example. That's a hub that JB started to help companies just learn from each other. That doesn't go on in a lot of cities. And I just think once you're ingrained in the community, which I've been part of for a while now, it's just amazing to see just the energy and everything going around. So I love this town, and I'm never leaving, and this will always be our hub. And I just want to keep giving jobs back and making people great.
Rana Bori is the CEO of Instant Alliance, and she's my guest tonight on the Download on Chicago Business. Rana, thanks so much for being here. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right. Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. I believe I got text right after I did the carryout, Pete, that I was messing up my what DACA, Dreamers, Dream Act, all that kind of means. I think they're getting me on a very specific thing. But the idea that however I phrased it in the carryout was not the right way to phrase it. But you got what I was getting at. I do appreciate it, though. I do appreciate people texting and saying, you know, trying to make me as accurate as possible. I'll accept that, right?
Of course.
Yeah, I love it.
I want to be held accountable.
Yeah.
Be correct.
I do. I want to be correct. All right, coming up, Chicago Treasurer Kurt Summers. Be my guest at the big table tonight. Then we got the Colin Warner from Crown Heights, the movie Crown Heights. His story is, I mean, the movie is based on his story. It's based on a true story about a man who was accused of murder, convicted, served 21 years and for a crime he didn't commit. And it was found in 21 years later that they proved that he didn't commit it. And he will be here to tell his story. So we'll talk with him, the source of the movie Crown Heights, which is out in theaters now. So that's going to be, I'm looking forward to that. And excited, the worst, back tonight, 312-981-7200. This is our segment we do every Tuesday where we complain about the worst things in society for prizes. Always good. I had a great worst over the vacation. I think it was vacations, the worst. But I forgot it already. That's the problem is it's like you get to the moment, you're like, oh, gosh. Oh, I wish I knew it.
You got to get one of these things called a smartphone, and they actually have notes and things on there. You should get yourself one of those.
No, I'm a flip guy. I've been a flip guy. I'm just going to stay flip. All right. Thanks, Rob. It is a download here on Chicago's very own 720 WGN. All right. Coming up 9 o'clock hour tonight, I'm very excited about this. Nnamdi Asamoah, the former NFL star, cornerback who played for the Eagles, the Raiders, other teams, has made a transition in his life after he retired football to Hollywood. He is an actor and a producer of the new movie Crown Heights, which won the top prize for drama at Sundance and is now in select theaters. It tells the story of Colin Warner, a Brooklyn man who was falsely accused and convicted of murder, exonerated 21 years later. It's played by Keith Stanfield from Atlanta, from Get Out. But Colin Warner in studio. We're going to talk with him about his life, a life that's had 21 years behind bars. That's coming up at 9 o'clock tonight. My guest tonight at the big table is currently the Chicago Treasurer. He's been so since appointed by the mayor in 2014. He was elected in 2015. Kurt Summers came to politics through finance, where he was part of capital management and global strategy firms. He got his start in politics as chief of staff of Cook County Board President Tony Preckwinkle. His job as treasurer to serve as Chicago's investor, Chicago's banker, Chicago's economic developer. Summers is a rising star in the Democratic Party, with some wondering if he was going to throw his hat in the ring for governor. Earlier this summer, he announced he was not running and instead backed businessman J.B. Pritzker for the job. Kurt Summers, my guest tonight, talk finance, politics, and the future of the Illinois Democratic Party. Treasurer Summers, welcome to the download. Good to see you.
Thanks for having me.
All right, so let's first talk tonight. I'm fascinated by your job. I told you right before the break that I spent the better part of the afternoon figuring out what a treasurer does. it blew my mind. But essentially, just to set it up, I mean, you are Chicago's investor. I mean, you have billions of dollars in portfolio that you're investing on behalf of Chicago.
That's right. As of yesterday evening, about $7.8 billion. And we invest on behalf of every resident of Chicago, and it's everything from tax revenues to bond proceeds to monies that we receive from the airports and revenues in that fashion. Our job is to invest them, earn money on them for the people of Chicago, and manage the accounts so that everything is on the up and up.
Yeah, as you mentioned, as of yesterday, because the quarterly earning report is in,
yeah.
The alderman today sort of lightly grilling you about what happened to the money that was on top. I mean, you reported in the spring that you had return on investment, meaning there was more money than you thought there was going to be. And everybody this summer was asking for it. They wanted it. And the mayor kind of said, no. And now everyone wants to know where that money went.
Yeah.
Where are we at with that?
Yeah. Well, I think you and some other members of the city council probably both learned today what the treasurer actually does, and that we don't allocate the money. So last year we generated $125 million of interest income and profits from investing. And that some of that money belongs to what's called the enterprise fund. So water, sewer, airports, and then some of it belongs to the general corporation. And when you have in the course of a year some revenues like interest income, you'll generate more revenues.
Mm-hmm.
Other revenues, you may expect you'll get more parking revenue, you'll get more revenue from different transaction taxes, and you may get less. And it's the job of the administration, the budget director, the CFO, to make all those things balance at the end of the year and make the surpluses outweigh, hopefully, the areas where you're short.
The only issue, but I think somewhat interesting, is that many aldermen stepped forward wanting a piece of that, and a lot of people wanted a violence prevention program this summer.
Yeah.
But this all was sparked by the idea of you coming forward and putting out a press release, essentially saying, we've got this extra money, and you got everybody's attention.
Right.
If you can't appropriate the money, and it's a CFO's job or somebody else's, why alert everybody, including the press, that we're making more money than we should?
Yeah, for a couple of reasons. One, it's my job to, right? So we're being transparent in this job in a way that no city in the country is. We do quarterly earnings calls. We have annual reviews of what our investment earnings are. And we did the same thing last year when we exceeded our revenue. We came out and said, look, we've exceeded our revenue. My team, who I'm proud of, did a great job this year, and they should be applauded. And that's more revenue, more money for the people of Chicago. So I'm always going to do that.
Yeah.
And not avoid the debate on where it should be spent. That's up to the council and that's up to the administration. My job is to just keep generating more of that. The other thing is, you know, we're launching a fund right now that is investing in Chicago and investing in Chicago's neighborhoods. And my point there was to say, look, if we're generating more money, I want to look for more funds.
This would be the Catalyst Fund, right?
The Catalyst Fund, the Chicago Community Catalyst Fund. So if we're generating more money, I want to look for more funds to invest. I'd like to stand at the other side of that line too and say, hey, we've got more capital here to invest. So so that's, you know, I think the conversation that we should be having. This is good debate,
right?
To say, you know, what are our priorities? It's not just a black and white budget document. These are our policy priorities. These are our priorities on what we believe in and how this city should be governed.
You know, it's interesting too, because there's the investment part, there's the banker part, there's the economic development part, and you talk about the Catalyst Fund. You know, this is a fund that, you know, when you talk about the 77 neighborhoods of Chicago, that whenever I have anybody in here who might be a someone who's for social justice or an activist or someone who represents a neighborhood, they will say the problem, the reason we have violence, the reason we have crime, the reason we have poverty, is there's no economic development in this area. And so it is, in a sense, your job to answer their questions. I mean, when they come forward and they say, hey, why aren't businesses, why is the city not investing in this area? Why aren't businesses investing in Inglewood?
Yep.
What's your answer to that as a Chicago treasurer who, I mean, at the end of the day, that's on the letterhead. This is your job to be an economic developer.
Yeah, so I took this job a little over 2.5 years ago, and I walked in and I thought it was shocking that we have a mandate to invest everywhere in the world. Like, we have a mandate to invest in South America, in the Middle East, in East Asia, in Western Europe, everywhere but the third largest market in the largest economy in the world, which happens to be our backyard. And it was crazy to me that our mandate to invest in Chicago was 0%. Not just in the treasury portfolio, but in our pension funds and you name it. And the reason for that effectively was political risk. You know, people didn't want the headline risk of, I invested in a local deal and it blew up. If you invest in a third world country dictatorship and it gets overthrown by the government and the state-owned enterprise blows up and you lose $50 million, it'll never hit the front page of the Chicago Tribune.
Interesting.
If you invest in your own backyard, and that deal happens to have some connected attorney who's the cousin of Alderman so-and-so who was grilling me today, then it's going to show up on the front page. And so there's an aversion to looking here because, you know, as a bureaucrat that or as someone who is interested in, you know, their own political existence going forward, that seems like a risky proposition.
Yeah.
And from my perspective, it's crazy to me that we don't invest here.
You come from the private sector. I mean, what's stopping the private sector from doing just that now? Because they don't have to worry about being on the front page. I mean, if there's no political risk, what's stopping a private sector from investing in the West Side or the South Side of
Look,
Chicago?
Look, so I grew up in the Bronzeville area. And if I, you know, took you around the blocks where I grew up, they look very similar to the way they did 30 years ago. And what stops them is the same thing that's been stopping them for the last several decades. There's a systemic bias that exists when it comes to traditional capital finding its way into non-traditional locales. And I would call those non-traditional locales. They're difficult for traditional investors to figure out, how do I underwrite this? Mm-hmm. How do I understand what's going to happen with this population? How do I know what this risk profile looks like? They're difficult to underwrite. And so as a result, the gap in the access to capital has just been wider and wider and wider. It makes it more and more difficult. And then it becomes a cumulative effect because then you say, well, gee, why didn't someone do it a decade ago? Well, they were asked the same questions you did, and then they never got off the dime and invested, so you're never going to get off the dime and invest. That widening and access to capital means lack of jobs, lack of economic opportunity. And I tend to subscribe with your guests who have said, so, you know, the quote that I have all the time is that we don't have a violence problem in the city. We have an economic problem. That's the root cause of what's happening here.
Could the city of Chicago and the treasurer's office, could you be a leader in that form? Could you be a leader and show the private sector how it's done and be able to non-traditionally invest in these communities and say, hey, here's the blueprint, here's the roadmap, let's go?
100%, that's what we're doing. So this $100 million is meant to be a seed that we're leveraging incremental capital from the private sector and saying, guys, we're all looking at this opportunity together. You're not alone. And we're taking the first big step. And we'll partner with you on how to invest in these neighborhoods, mm-hmm. how to look at these businesses and what their growth opportunities are, and how to underwrite the opportunity that people in these neighborhoods represent.
Chicago Treasurer Kurt Summers, my guest tonight at the big table. We're talking finance. It's good stuff. Let's do this. We'll take a break, and we'll come back. And I want to talk a little bit more about this, because the mayor was in front of Malcolm X College not too long ago. I mean, I feel like it's now months, where he really kind of said he wanted the private sector to step up, the private business community to step up in some of these issues. And I want to get your take on where you see private sector Chicago businesses playing a part in the infrastructure and the redevelopment of Chicago as we know it. Kurt Summers, my guest, the treasurer. Stay with us. In studio with me tonight at the big table, Chicago Treasurer Kurt Summers. We're talking about economic development. It's turned into a big ticket, long-term conversation. But, you know, I'm interested because you hear it all the time, as we mentioned, when we talk about economic development and the treasurer's office, which is really involved in investments on Chicago's money. You hear it all the time that you could get rid of a lot of societal ills if economic development was present. You know, when you think, and this is not just a conversation for Chicago. I feel like this is a conversation. We're just thinking about Harvard, Illinois, and they had their issues with Motorola and big businesses coming in or businesses leaving towns. I think of so many different places that have lost. And, you know, when it comes down to it, I mean, how important is it for the city or any municipality to be in this game, to say this is not, we're not going to let private market and everything else just sort of figure it out. We have to take charge and sort of lead the way when it comes to economic development.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's, we have to, the leaders of this city, both in the public and the private sector, have to take the reins and control their own destiny a bit and be a part of designing the future. This is, you know, our generation's Burnham plan. You know, that wouldn't have happened without a plan commission and civic leaders and partners saying, this is what we want our city to look like. This is what we want it to be about. This is what we want it to stand for, how it wanted to be shaped, who we want to attract to live here, and what we're going to be investing in. Mm-hmm. If we didn't do that, then we wouldn't have had a century of progress that we had, and we wouldn't be the great city that we are. It's the same thing now. We are in a situation. I was telling someone, if you looked in the sort of last quarter of last year, first quarter of this year, that 6-month period, we had half a dozen or more front page articles in the Wall Street Journal, New York Times, Financial Times, Washington Post, all around Chicago and its violence. Yeah. Not its economic opportunity, not this thriving metropolis, not what's happening with, you know, our median income or new companies who are locating here. It was about the violence. It's hard to recruit people to come here when that's on the front page. It's hard to get companies to double down and build more investment when that's, you know, on the front page of leading financial newspapers and journals. It's not really attracting investment.
Journal, right.
You're on the FT and the Wall Street Journal saying, look at the bloody weekend Chicago had.
Are private businesses paying attention to that?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I think if you talk to business leaders here, you know, increasingly the future in business competition is about people and about innovation. And if you can't have the right people and you can't attract them and you can't innovate, it makes it pretty damn hard to continue to attract the best and brightest when you have these social issues going on and folks have to come here and tell their parents, don't worry about it, Mom, I'll be okay. Don't worry, that's in that part of town, not in this part of town. If you're not from here, it's difficult for folks to understand that. Yeah. And it's difficult for folks when we have questions questions, forget about the violence for a second. We have questions like, will we open schools on time? Well, how do you get a young family to move here? They don't even know if their schools are going
to
open.
I mean, it's similar to what we saw today with the Dow, this idea that when there is tumult and stress, and whether it be North Korea or whether it be other areas or hurricane, what have you, it does affect money. And it affects people's confidence in money. When you talk about local issues of violence or local issues of schools and infrastructure, does it affect Chicago's money? I mean, does it the same way that the Dow?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, you just look at the portfolio of stocks. This question about schools, I mean, look at the last week. There was an article in the Journal that said the price of Chicago's bonds went up 20 points, 20 percentage points in the course in between, you know, between the end of session and last week,
yeah,
because there's a budget deal. So that 20 points has a direct impact on the cost of doing business in the city of Chicago. And that's just volatility driven by political battles and battles through the media between, you know, a governor, a speaker, a mayor. Nothing changed in the fundamental valuation of anything. The number of students didn't change. Mm-hmm. You know, the way that we value, but the school start date didn't change.
I mean, here's the thing. You got a governor who ran on the platform that he was a businessman. You got a mayor who dabbled in being a fund, a capital, I don't even know which hedge fund, whatever it is, right? He's a money guy. You're a money guy. I mean, I was for Speaker Madigan's a lawyer at certain point. You guys all know this. So how is it that the political battles get in the way of affecting our bottom line?
Yeah, I mean, I think I'd say that all four of those folks that you mentioned have kind of different backgrounds. But I think that sometimes, you know, politics, especially in Chicago and in Springfield, is where logic goes to die. And things that are seemingly straightforward before people get in these roles get overshadowed by the political battle, ego, and a host of things that have nothing to do with what's best for the residents, what's best for the children in schools, what's best for the future of the city or the state.
But that's their job.
It's 100%
their job. It's elected officials. As we look at, and I hear this all the time, and you know, you'll hear that Illinois, and we hear this in Chicago, but Illinois more likely, needs to be a more business-friendly state. And I hear this all the time in the rhetoric, and it's in the political battles, especially with Rauner and the unions, the public unions. What does that mean? From your vantage point of being in finance and your background of being the Chicago treasurer, what does it mean to be a business-friendly municipality?
Yeah. So let me separate the dog whistle politics from reality, right? There's dog whistle politics of business friendly, meaning anti collective bargaining, anti organized labor, in anti union. Well, Chicago's the birthplace of the modern day labor movement. It's not going to happen here, right? So that kind of ideological battle is really not where the fight needs to be. The real question when you're asking what's business friendly, mm-hmm, is what's the total cost of doing business here? How hard is it for me to recruit people here versus recruit people other places? We have 160,000 college graduates that come out of the Chicago area every year. How does that compare to other parts of the country? Pretty good. What's the, you know, percentage of the population per capita that has a college degree? We're the highest in the nation in that regard. How difficult is it for me to see and visit clients? We have a quarter of the Fortune 500 within 150 miles here, you know, and so worst case, a really short flight. We have accessibility to things that lower the cost of business. Too often, the conversation is centered around, what is your marginal tax rate, corporate tax rate, and are you unionized? And so what's going to happen to, you know, am I going to be bargained or not? And then the third area, which I think that there is opportunity for people to align and agree on, is in this area of workers' comp, because there's a real cost to that. And I think that that's an opportunity for both sides to agree. But let's stop having the conversation about just the tax environment and say, what's it cost to do business here? What's the cost per per square foot of my land here, which is less than the other top five cities that are attracting business? Mm-hmm. How hard is it for me to recruit, which is easier than most other places? What's the quality of the talent pool that already exists here, which is higher than most other places? All those things factor into the cost of doing business.
Chicago Treasurer Kurt Summers in studio with me at the big table tonight. We're talking business, finance, and economic development here on The Download. We'll take a quick break. We'll get an update on tonight's news, and we'll continue the conversation with Treasurer Summers. Stay with us. Thank you, Rob. It's a download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Back in the saddle. I had a week off vacation. We're back in tonight. Big table. My first big table back. Chicago Treasurer Kurt Summers. We're talking, you know, a little coffee table conversation about economic development, finances, pensions.
Keeping it light.
Keeping it light here on a Tuesday night. All right. Let's get into the issue of pensions, because that's something that I feel a lot of people want to gloss over and they want to make it political. But it does have an effect. It's had a catastrophic effect on Illinois politics in the last 4 years, 5 years. This idea that we've created a system where pension payments to the people who are receiving pensions from the state are on a sliding scale, and they continue to balloon and balloon and balloon. And more often than not, we're seeing that in some municipalities in the state and as well as different institutions like CPS. You're seeing pension payments that are half of the budget. As a city treasurer, and you sit on a lot of the local pension boards, paint a picture for us. I mean, are we at the top end of this? Are we at the point where we're like, whew, we got through that pension stuff?
Right.
Or is the worst yet to come?
So let me start with Illinois, which ranks 47th out of 50 states in pension funding. You know, so we're at the very, very bottom, both in terms of size of the total pension debt, percentage of unfunded liability, and amount of debt per home. You know, amount of pension debt per home in Illinois is second only to, I think, Connecticut. So we're at the bottom, folks, you know, of the list. And then if you sort of migrate up to Chicago, you know, in Chicago there have been some things done, some reforms made on pensions, which have changed some of the funding largely to them and moved them to a ramp so that we don't really get in this place again. We have to, at some point in the near future, 2023 actually, have be putting our actuarial required contribution in, meaning we can't take pension holidays, we can't not pay into the fund, we can't pay less than what's required going forward. Or we'll just have to go to Springfield again and change the legislation.
Yeah, which
people do. But in principle, that shouldn't change. Here's the issue with that. To get between now and 2023, there's another $1.3 to $1.5 billion that we've got to figure out that we don't have funding solutions for today, and that will be an ongoing, you know, $900 to $1 billion of revenue, largely, meaning, you know, in layman's terms, taxes for most people that have to be met. So we're by no means out of the woods, and we've inherited this situation. You know, I tell people all the time, most of the folks who are sitting on these pension boards or who are legislators, save for one or two very well-known ones, they weren't there to create this mess, but we all have inherited it together. And you know, when I wasn't born, and when the state had its last constitutional convention, which created a fundamental constitutional right for workers for these benefits. So, you know, we've inherited these things, and now we have to work on them together, and we can't not, you know, address them in a way that is forward looking. And that means both the workers,
right,
and the taxpayers and the politicians all have to think about this a little bit differently.
It, you know, it is interesting because, you know, we've had the Supreme Court weigh in, the Illinois Supreme Court weighed in and said, hey, you know, you can't, this money's already been paid in. You owe this money. There's no way any handshake deal that's been made has to be honored. Don't you can't weasel your way around this. Like, that's essentially what's happening. And that has really kind of tied the hands of politicians both in Springfield and in Chicago in the way that you can't really do reform on the pensions that are existing.
Yeah, I mean, if
but you can look to the pensions of the future.
That's right. I mean, if you look at, for example, Dallas just went through a restructuring. They didn't have this issue of, you know, having this constitutional right that you can't change benefits. So they were able to do so and do so in a productive way that worked for everyone involved. In this case, what, you know, I give people the example all the time. You know, most of these pensions, people work for 30 years and then they get a fully vested pension. Well, someone could be working for 15 years and what they've paid into is their right. It's their constitutional right. It's their benefit. And no one can take that away from them. But just like with any other annuity or any other retirement plan, the next 15 years, you know, you paid into it at 8 or 8.5%, mm-hmm. you may have to pay into a little bit more, 10, 11, 12, 13%.
That's outside of the Illinois Supreme Court. That's not unconstitutional to do
that's
that.
That's correct. That's and it's also not uncommon. And if you're going to go to taxpayers and say, hey, guys, all of us got this wrong in the past. All of us were signing checks to get reelected, and you know, as labor leaders or as elected leaders, mm-hmm. folks were signing checks now that didn't have to get cashed until 30 years in the future, so they get reelected today. You know, you have a messed up incentive system here. So we all inherit this together. If you got to go back to taxpayers and say, we need another $1 billion of taxes, you have to go to the folks who aren't fully vested yet and say, you know, what you've got, and you've earned it, and you've paid into it. Now let's look forward and talk about what it costs you, the employee, not just the employer,
right,
to keep that benefit going forward.
Well, it's interesting, too, because I'll have people who text in right now where one person says, don't you dare take my money away. Right, and that's
don't want to,
but that's yeah. a fear.
Yeah.
Then on the other side, you say people say, why should government employees get pensions? I work in the private sector; I don't get a pension.
Yeah.
So I mean, you see this; these are crystallizing, simplistic kind of views towards pension reform or pensions and how they work.
Yeah. Let me be really clear. It is any worker's constitutional right to get everything that they've earned. No, I have no desire, and I think any sort of smart politician in Chicago or in Illinois should have zero desire to take that away from them if they want to maintain, you know, their status here. And if they just want to be a good and decent person, you can't take that away from retirees. You can't take that away from workers who have earned what they've earned.
They earned it.
We're talking about going forward. What's that look like? And I think if you have to have a go forward different conversation with one part of the equation, you got to have it with the other. In the case of the, you know, why should workers have pensions when private employees don't? Look, I think defined benefit pensions in this country have been declining and declining and declining year after year after year in every industry. And I think in some public places, folks have included new concepts of defined contributions, 401ks, retirement plans. Those things are difficult, I think, for folks to transition to, and mm-hmm. they're very complicated, and they take, it's just like Social Security. You take all the risk and you put it on the individual.
Right. Stock market, right.
Right. And so some folks want to maintain the option and say, wait a second, I don't want to take stock risk. I want to know that I worked hard and there's going to be a retirement there. And I think that most people would say, if that's an option that's been provided in the past, we can provide that option in the future. And I think increasingly people are looking and saying, can we provide other options, not mandates, but other options?
Is there a future? And I say this as a taxpayer and as somebody who's observed what's happening. I don't have a pension, but observe what's happening, that we just take politicians out of it. They don't shouldn't be money. They shouldn't be managing pension funds. We've seen what's happened. The pension holidays and the mispayments have put us in this position where people are now in a on shaky ground about whether or not they're going to be able to retire in the same way they thought they were. I mean, is there a future where you see that, hey, you know, this should be offloaded to people who do this, not the guy we elected to be treasurer? And nothing against you, but
no, it's fine. The guy you elected to be treasurer probably actually has the best background.
Sure.
Background
but
to do
you
it.
See but what I'm saying.
But I think that the there is a model where that exists elsewhere in the country. You see it in D.C. or the D.C. Retirement Board, but that was effectively the result of a federal takeover. You see it in some other large municipalities and small, most of whom have had a bankruptcy issue or they've had mm-hmm. some event that caused it. I don't see that happening here, but I do think that we should be aware of the decision makers, right? So you have, you know, elected union leaders who want to get reelected and want to do what's right for the worker, and they clearly have a vantage point that wants to benefit the worker in many cases. And you have appointees from elected leaders, from politicians, who want to get reelected.
Yeah, right.
Who wanted to, and so, you know,
it gets in the way. I mean, the personal ambition gets in the way.
Personal ambition, politics, oftentimes get in the way. But the decision makers aren't the ones who sit on these boards. You know, the decision makers, pensions in Illinois, in any town and city in Illinois, but especially in Chicago, are all functions of state government. These are all, you can't make a single administrative change in a pension without going to Springfield. Mm-hmm. So ultimately, the folks who decide and determine this stuff, you know, sit in the General Assembly.
Kurt Summers, my guest, the Chicago Treasurer. Earlier this summer, the rumor winds had you thinking about a run for governor. Were you thinking about it? I mean, was that something that you were considering?
Yeah, I mean, it was more than the rumor winds. It was a reality. It was, you know, conversations with pollsters and with consultants and with the most important consultant, my wife, about the future of this state. And, you know, the reality was really looking at who was being served well in Illinois and who's being served poorly and how do we fix that. And under every circumstance that I could consider, the current leadership, the current administration or lack of leadership had to go. And so the question was, who's the right person to replace him?
Eventually, why did you decide not to?
Yeah, ultimately, what I decided was that, you know, everyone has a purpose and that purpose has a season. And, you know, you have to be willing to lay it all on the line for that fight in this season. And I feel like for me, this wasn't the fight for this season. And the bigger question for me was, if I didn't do it, was there someone there who would fight that fight as well as I think I could and would listen to people that I would listen to? And I found that person to support in J.B. Pritzker.
J.B. Pritzker and Julie Stratton as well, who's his running mate. You know, today starts the day with petitions. I mean, here we go with the run for governor in 2018.
Yeah,
Marilyn Katz was on the show not too long ago. She sat down and she said pointedly, she said, there is no way to win as a Democrat in the state of Illinois without the black community in Chicago. That's what she said. She said, there's just no way. There's no way around it. Does J.B. Pritzker have inroads in that community? And can he be can he win Illinois without it?
Yeah. Let me just say this just to give you the numbers, which sort of spoke to my own viability as a African-American elected official. The black vote in the Democratic primary in Illinois is 25% to 30% of the vote. It is the single largest electoral voting bloc in the traditional Democratic primary. So hard to win without having significant inroads there and having a good showing, if not a majority of those voters. I think that JB, not because of his selection of Juliana, who's a friend of mine who used to work with me in Cook County and who I've known for a long time, not because of that selection. I think people vote for the top of the ticket. I think because JB gets it and JB cares and understands, here's the plight of people who are less fortunate. Here's the plight of people who are minorities in this state. Here are the plight of people who have dealt with lack of access, lack of opportunity, and a disconnection to, you know, the opportunities that are available for all people in Illinois. I think he gets that and understands that, how he can bridge the gap and make that connection. He's focused on jobs. He's focused on early childhood education. He's focused on investing in neighborhoods. He's focused on eliminating the wage gap and building businesses here that will invest here. And so I think that's all the right thing. And you go to any community, it doesn't just have to be the Black community, but you go to any community where you have working people and you say, I want to raise the wage. I want to increase jobs. I want to lower the barriers that you have to a better life for yourself and your family. I want to improve the education system here. People would say, great, where do we go? Where do I sign up?
For you, I mean, what does higher office look like for you? I mean, you're the Chicago treasurer right now. That position is one that treasurers in both the city and the state have been jumping off points for bigger and different ambitions. I mean, for you, I mean, do you see yourself staying as treasurer, or do you have eyes on other citywide positions that may be above you?
Yeah, I think
that's a very polite, politically correct way to say, are you going to run for mayor?
No, I got it. I read between the lines on that one. Very subtle. I think, first of all, I love my job. I love doing this. I was a finance major. I was the kid who, you know, my favorite restaurant growing up was McDonald's, and it was a treat for me to go to McDonald's, and every kid would come home ripping open their Happy Meal and show their toy, and I'd come home and ask my mom, why don't we own McDonald's stock? You know, it was just a different kind of kid. So I spent my life really preparing for this point and this moment to take this craft that I built in finance and in investments and in the private sector and apply it to the city that I love and apply it to all the people of the city. And we're doing a great job. And so I have, you know, today is the first day of petitions for governor. We're about a year out for petitions for treasurer again, or mayor, or any other office. So I got a year to think about what I want to do next. But in the meantime, I love this job, and there's no shortage of problems that we all have to solve. If you ever have a guest and they say, for a race that's literally 18 months from now, I'm thinking about that now, you're ignoring the problems that we really have today. And I'm focused on that.
All right. That's a good answer. Chicago Treasurer Kurt Summers in studio tonight, my guest at the big table. Treasurer Summers, thanks for being here. Appreciate the conversation.
Thanks for having me.
Always good to have the city treasurer in, right? It's always good in any radio show to be able to say, hey, the treasurer's here. We're talking about finance. A lot of great stuff on text tonight, just about the role of government and pensions. Teacher text in saying it's society's job to take care of the educators. I mean, they work for the people. They're a teacher. They educate your children. There's something to be said about that. Was the whole concept to begin with, right? Now, the others that text in is too long for me to read, but 847 is a good point about, you know, that is true, but what really causes the problem is when people start to play little tricks with the pensions. The last 2 years, 3 years, they get paid more, so more money goes into the pension. We start to see that kind of stuff. Yeah, so I think I could see it from both sides. But good conversation with the city treasurer, Kurt Summers, who, you know, I hear a lot, you know, shake the tree and people talk that he's got his eyes on the mayor's office. So it could be, as people wonder who may be up to challenge Mayor Rahm Emanuel, Kurt Summers could be it. Interesting conversation to have coming up here. But like you said, it's 18 months away. So anyone who's sitting in this chair saying they're thinking about it is not doing their job. All right, coming up, we're going to talk about the new movie Crown Heights with Colin. I mean, I'm very excited to have this conversation. Stay with us. Welcome back to the Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Coffin. Well, the new film Crown Heights just opened in select theaters around Chicagoland. It's a film based on a true story, the true story of Colin Warner, who spent 21 years in prison for a murder he did not commit. The Brooklyn resident was picked up in 1980 for a neighborhood murder. The story unfolds as a true nightmare. Police misconduct, false confessions, eyewitnesses coerced, and the courts and parole boards turning their backs on Warner. If it weren't for the tireless work of his friends and family, Warner would still be serving a life sentence today. The film is a powerful look at hope, desperation, and ultimately, redemption. In the film, Warner is played by Lakeith Stanfield, and his best friend KC is played by Nnamdi Asamoah, who also produces the film. And if you're familiar with that name, it's probably because you're a football fan. Asamoah was an all-pro defensive back for years in the NFL, but he's turned his post-football career to acting, to filmmaking. The film won top prize for drama at this year's Sundance Film Festival, and it's now coming to Chicago. In studio with me tonight at the big table, Nnamdi Asamoah and Colin Warner, the man the movie is based on, the man wrongfully convicted of murder. Gentlemen, thanks for being here. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
What an intro. That was
it's a lot of words, right?
Yeah, that was great. Thank you.
Nnamdi, why don't we start with you? This is a story that Colin's story is somewhat documented because it was a big deal in New York at the time. What convinced you to produce this film, to get into this story?
Yeah, it was somewhat documented, but I had never heard of it. You know, I was in Los Angeles at the time. Well, I wasn't born when Colin went in, but when he came out, I was still in California, and I didn't know about the story. But our director, Matt Ruskin, heard the story on This American Life and immediately wanted to get the rights to the story to turn it into a film. And I saw a little documentary that he made, and it just blew me away. It was a 5-minute documentary on Colin and Carl. And, you know, right when Colin gets out of prison, he says, "I forgive everyone that put me in this position." And that just blew me away completely. I said I wanted to be a part of it.
That obviously is a big part of the movie, this idea of forgiveness and redemption. Mm-hmm. Colin, I want to get into your story, but is that true? I mean, is that a true statement that you forgave people for what happened to you for 21 years of being wrongfully incarcerated?
I had to have forgiven people. Because if I kept my anger, I wouldn't be here talking to you right now. Again, everybody out there, I'm Colin Warner. The movie Crown Heights is a fraction of what I went through in upstate New York, being falsely arrested, convicted, and sentenced to 15 years to life for a murder I did not commit.
Nnamdi, when putting a story together like this, being in the film but also being a producer, how important is it for it to be 100% accurate?
Well, for me, that's filmmaking. You know, I grew up, my first film was a film called, the first film I saw was a film called Who Framed Roger Rabbit, which I, you know, many people know and love.
An indie, that indie, right?
Yeah, that small, tiny film. And then, but you know, it's fun, and there's like cartoons. What's her name?
Jessica Rabbit,
I think.
Yeah,
and so there's cartoons and different things, and so it's fun. But, you know, it's a movie. And a year later, my aunt snuck us in to see Boys in the Hood. And I'm from L.A., and watching Boys in the Hood, I'll never forget, I came out of that asking my aunt just repeatedly, "Are you sure that this was fake? Are you sure this was a movie?" It was that real to me. And so I think ever since then, I was just attracted to authentic stories and just being able to tell a story in a way where, you know, the viewer doesn't know whether it's a movie or if it's real. So when Colin's story comes to the forefront and there's a responsibility to him and to Carl and to Antoinette and everyone involved with the story to bring it out and make it authentic, there was no other way to do it. It can't be 100% accurate just because it is a film, but to get as close to that 100 as possible was what we were striving for from the start.
Does it, because right at the top of the film, it says based on a true story. And as a viewer and you're watching this, an incredible story, one that you almost want to be fake. You know, you want it to be fake,
right?
Because anyone who has any semblance of emotion in them recognizes or can be empathetic to this, because it's just tremendous. It's a tremendous nightmare. Everything that goes wrong can go wrong. So I guess the question.
But you know what's crazy is there were so many more things about Colin's story that we didn't put in the film because if you watched it, you would say there's no way that that happened. You know, there were so many. We had a list of things. And in the original script, there were so many stories. Even reading the script, I was like, that couldn't have happened. That's not real. That's a, you know, no one's going to believe that. Right. You got to, let's make it real. And our director's like, no, this actually happened.
When approached about a movie that's being made about your life, Colin, what, there's the This American Life story, but the idea of wanting to, in a way, fictionalize this film, what was your first reaction? Were you excited about your story being on screen?
I was excited because for 37 years I wanted to tell my story. I wanted to be heard. And this is the opportunity where not only America, but hopefully the whole world will hear the story. What I find is when I tell my story, people don't believe because to them it's so incredible. But I believe a lot of us know about my story and other stories. And sometimes we tend to not think about it, forget about it.
Mm-hmm.
But what I want people to do is to think about it. And after thinking about it, do something about it. Not per se towards me, but towards people in the immediate area, friends, family, right? This movie is about unconditional love. This movie is about faith, strength, and keeping strong. So if anyone have a problem in these areas, they can look at the movie and say, listen, this little scraggly man, if this little scraggly man could do this, then I could.
Right. Mm. Colin Warner, my guest in studio tonight, spent 21 years of his life in prison for a murder he did not commit. The film is based on his life, based on a true story. Crown Heights just opened here in Chicago. Namdi Asomugha, the producer and also in the film, he plays KC. We'll talk more about that. We'll take a quick break here on The Download. We'll come back. We'll talk more with Colin and Namdi here on The Download. Stay with us. Welcome back to Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. My guest in studio tonight at the big table, the man who the new film Crown Heights is based on his life, the Crown Heights, the Sundance Award-winning film, which is now open in select theaters around Chicago. Colin Warner, who spent 21 years of his life in prison for a murder he did not commit. This is the story of Colin, played wonderfully by Lakeith Stanfield, and also Namdi Asomugha, who is the producer on the film, but also the actor who plays KC, his friend. You know, it's interesting, Namdi, because I think of so many pro athletes who've made the transition to being actors, and it's almost always it's physical. So many athletes will become, you know, they play bodybuilders or they play athletes or they do things like this. You're very understated in this film. For a professional athlete who is, you know, making a transition to being an actor, you play KC, who has big glasses, and he's a the furthest thing you think from a guy who's going to be catching, you know, or catching balls on the field. But talk about that. Talk about the experience of playing KC and what you wanted to draw from this character.
Well, I think initially the first thing as an athlete is to go for the more physical, you know, sort of roles, or the superhero even, or anything like that.
Right.
Security guard, whatever you could get. But, you know, I don't know. It wasn't the direction I wanted to go in. And when I would go into these meetings with casting directors or auditions or anything like that, there was just this, you walk in the door as a football player and they already have a certain judgment on you, like you're going to be shut down emotionally. You're not going to be vulnerable. You're not going to be able to get to places that they need you to get. Mm. You're going to be stiff.
Right.
And a lot of that is true. Because as football players, we have to be that in order to, you know, succeed. And so there was a lot of work that just went into me basically shedding that and kind of being able to be open and being able to be a little more loose. You can't just walk off the football field and go straight into doing that.
Talking about the character of KC, and what I recognize from the film, especially as you get to the point where it feels like there's no hope. Courts have turned down appeals, and you're three quarters through the film.
Mm-hmm.
The desperation, we can understand it from Colin's side in the film, right?
Mm-hmm.
From your side, you play it to this way that there is this desperation. Your family, there's the cracks in the foundation. Everything about who you were as an adult and as a man was kind of falling apart around you as you made it your life's mission to help the character Colin, who's in jail.
Right.
Talk about getting there, like that idea of being able to evoke desperation, to evoke that I'm at my last moment. I thought about that when watching it, and I said, this film is not just about Colin. It's about the pressures it put on the family and friends around it.
Yeah, I don't know exactly how I got there. It was like a lot of work that went into every stage of the character in Carl. But I know that Keith and I, we didn't get a lot of time to spend with each other. He was busy beforehand. Mm-hmm. I was a little busy. Then once we started shooting, we realized we didn't even have any scenes to get. We had like two scenes because he's always in prison,
right,
and I'm out of prison. And so at first that was frustrating. We talked about it, and we used it sort of as a way for us to have that desperation and, you know, just not being able to talk to each other. There was a longing to sort of to be connected,
mm-hmm,
you know, to something that we didn't have, which was our exact friendship, you know. Right. So I think that was something that was channeled, like, this is there's something out there that I can't get, but I want to be a part of. I don't know. It's complicated to explain exactly
how it worked out. There's an arc to the character.
Yeah.
And as it becomes more and more, when it seems like the darkest days for Colin in the story, where he's not going to get out and this tragedy is going to go without justice.
Yeah.
That's when the characters are most interesting. Watching you at that point decide what you want to do with your life and have to, you know, mortgage your family, mortgage your finances, everything to make it happen. That's where you do such a great job of exhibiting that.
Yeah. Thank you for that. Yeah, I talk with Colin and talking with him. He always says, you can't tell my story without telling Carl King's story. And not just this magnanimous thing that he did, but also the hell that he went through during all of that time as well. It was the furthest thing from easy for him.
Namdi Asomugha plays Carl in the film Crown Heights, which just opened in select theaters. It's a true story about Colin Warner, who spent 21 years in prison. Colin Warner's in studio with us. Let's make a transition to talk about your story. As we kind of mentioned in the first segment, there's parts of it where you're like, this couldn't happen.
Right. It's unbelievable. I want the audience to look at Carl King, played by Namdi Asomugha. Carl King, to me, represents what a human being should be.
Mm.
I never ask for help, but once you see another human being in trouble, and in Carl's instance, he knew the conviction was a violation, was unjust. He was 17 when I was arrested. And not knowing anything about the law and putting himself in a position where he could get some help.
Right.
Friends and family used to call him a fanatic because of the strength of his determination. Beautiful man, right? And I wish everybody will take a little bit of teachings from the movie about him.
You were a young kid.
18.
18 years old when this happened.
Yes.
It's played well, and you get the feel from the movie, you know, the expression of disbelief that's happening. When you went through the beginning stages, when you were in the first months of being in jail, before even the prison sentence, before the trial, before everything, In the back of your mind, where you were in there, was it just a waiting game? Did you, knowing that you did not convict this murder and later that being proven to, were you just like, I just got to wait this out? What are the emotions going through as a kid waiting for this?
Well, my initial reaction was exactly what I said, wait, because I knew I was innocent and I believed wholeheartedly that the system will correct what was going on. So, again, I equated to be on the Star Trek Enterprise, Captain Kirk, and getting beamed up to another planet. Totally different language, culture, landscape. And as Captain Kirk did, you have to investigate, do what he got to do, take what he got to take,
mm-hmm,
and then beam back to the Enterprise. I didn't have that beam back equipment to beam back to New York. So it was frustrating, but through 21 years is fate. A prisoner once told me that you can never keep a truth to the end. Somewhere along the line, the truth is going to reveal itself.
Right.
Right. And this was my hope. Right. Yeah, during the years, I got depressed, frustrated, but I had key people surrounding me on the outside and even on the inside that gave me that boost, that energy to keep on fighting. Because I equated as a battle between myself and New York State. That was my battle from day one. And I want the audience to see, listen, no matter how small you think you are, if you have an agenda and it's righteous, follow through. Follow through.
Colin Warner's my guest in studio. The movie Crown Heights is about his true story. He spent 21 years in prison for a murder he did not commit. Namdi Asomugha is also in studio, actors in the film and also producer. Crown Heights just opened last weekend in select theaters around Chicagoland. It was the top prize for drama at Sundance. All right, we'll take a quick break. We'll get an update on tonight's news. We'll come back, and I want to continue the story, Colin's story, here on The Download. Stay with us. Berwyn is the next location for the next stop on the WGN Radio Hometown Voices Tour, presented by Allstate. Join me for a live broadcast of The Download on Friday, September 15th. At Laverne's Tavern in Berwyn from 7 to 10. Well, we don't have to do that last hour, huh? Well, it's Friday. They got the high school football, right? No need to travel to Munich because Bavaria comes to Berwyn. That's good. With their annual Oktoberfest celebration. Come on out and enjoy a special Oktoberfest-inspired menu and other specials at Laverne's Tavern. How great is that? I mean, Oktoberfest in September, but, you know, I think that's how it always is. One of the weird inconsistencies of our world, of why Oktoberfest is in September, but that's all the way. But the idea of doing a broadcaster, that's sweet, right? It'll just be a three-hour smorgasbord of conversation about steins. Like, it'll just be art. It'll be all about the different steins that you can get.
I was visiting a friend over the break here who is a pilot for UPS. Flies everywhere. I mean, you see his Instagram. He's in the Philippines. He's in China. He's in Japan. He's all over in these amazing pictures of these huge cities everywhere. And so I'm like, hey, well, you know, you travel a lot. And like, what is your favorite city to go to? He said Heidelberg, Germany.
Hey.
Without even skipping a beat.
I've been there, yeah.
Heidelberg.
You ever been there?
Not even like Munich.
Heidelberg is charming. My brother lived there. He lived there for 2 years. His wife was working I forgot what company it was, but she was the Shure. I think it was Shure. But the idea is she was there, like running the shop there. So my brother, they moved there for 2 years. So we went and visited them. And I can see that. It is, it's got a river that runs through the middle of it, mm-hmm. and you got the castles on the hill kind of thing.
All right, well, no.
So, hey, right. I'm just letting you know. You fly into Frankfurt, and then you drive like an hour to Heidelberg.
All right, because I was on the fence when he recommended it, but now we got two people backing in Heidelberg up.
I don't know if I'm backing Heidelberg up to beat every city in the entire world, but I feel like it was nice. Had a nice little downtown, very Christmassy. You'd love it. Oh my God, yeah. You'd love it. It's like they start in November with like Kris Kringle, all cobblestone square, and you go in there and they've got the original kind of Christmassy ornaments and stuff. Like, you would love it. Me? Not so much. Visit the events page at WGNRadio.com for details. The WGN Radio Hometown Voices Tour presented by Allstate, Chicago's own good hands. We will be at Laverne's on September 15th. More with Colin Warner and Namdi Asomugha in studio tonight talking about the movie Crown Heights after Rob's news. Welcome back to Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. My guests in studio tonight are with the film Crown Heights, which just opened in select theaters around Chicagoland, a film based on a true story, the true story of Colin Warner, who's in studio tonight. Colin had spent 21 years in prison for a murder he did not commit. And also in studio, Namdi Asomugha, the producer and also actor that's in the film, plays Carl. It's amazing to me. I kind of mentioned right at the top of this, the perfect nightmare that has to happen, from police misconduct to coerced confessions to a justice system that didn't want to hear it. They didn't want anything to do with it, through even to the point of the way that the system is rigged for people who have money. And the way that there was a great scene where the lawyer takes the money and really doesn't do anything. To be along a journey that takes a better part, you spent more time in prison than you had outside at that point.
Yes.
What were the emotions going through the idea that one after another, the things were not going your way?
Well, to me, that was part of my life. And I believe that is part of everybody's life, because nothing goes smooth in life. This event in my life totally changed my life, changed my concept of thinking. I am a product of the New York State institutional facilities, right? During my whole 21 years, what I was trying to maintain was my sanity, not to fall into the prison program.
I know it's such a generic question. It's so large and such a span and so important and emotional to you, but how do you do that? Because I can only, I'm not in that situation, but I feel like if I were in the middle of that, I don't know if I would keep hope alive.
Hmm. What kept me was I went back to the teachings of my parents, which I refused at the time they were giving me, because I needed something that I was familiar with, because I was in a natural environment and I saw the behaviors of other prisoners. So that was my only strength in reverting back to what my grandmother, Millicent Barnett, and my father, Roderick Warner, taught me. It was hard because a lot of prisoners called me crazy. And at that time, they called me crazy. I considered it a compliment, because I knew they would leave me alone and I was able to do my own thing in prison. But it was a struggle.
The hardest part about the film, and it really is this great contrast, it's great for film, not so great for your life, but the idea that the parole system and the justice system, they want a rehabilitated prisoner. And part of that is to accept that you did something wrong,
right,
and show remorse and show that you've made up for the fact that you committed this murder. Right. But in your case, you didn't commit it. So by even defying and say, I didn't do it, they see it as, well, this prisoner is not ready for rehabilitation, parole denied. It's amazing to me that the construct like that really makes for great film, but like I said, for your life, that how do you get past that?
Well, I realized early that you cannot pee or repee or find anything if you kill another human being. So I didn't want to take that. Plus, in accepting the murder, I will be accepting what the courts labeled me as a murderer. I was never a murderer.
Even in the sense that they're not going to let you out of jail.
Yeah.
They were going to let you out of prison because they're like, well, he's not saying that he did it. He's not showing remorse for the crime. So,
well, that's the reason why I did 6 extra years, because I refused to admit and show remorse. And at my third parole board hearing, I told the parole officers that if it meant getting my freedom by lying on myself,
you weren't going to do it.
I wasn't going to do that. Let's keep a cell for me.
Namdi, how much did you know about this story as a producer, someone to get involved? When you hear this story and you hear Colin talking about not the particulars, the this happened, then this happened, this happened, but more the emotional story, the story of what it takes to get through something like this. How do you relate as someone who hasn't gone through it? How do you relate as an actor, as a producer, as a human being to Colin's story?
Boy, that's difficult. I guess if I thought about it, I could find some ways to relate. It's just so unimaginable when I think about his story that I feel like I haven't reached that point. I mean, because he was at a breaking point probably several times. I've never been at a breaking point like that with life and death, you know. Carl as well. They were all at breaking points. So I don't know. I don't know how I relate to it in that sense. I just know that they've taught me a lot about friendship and about resiliency. Like I said earlier, there's so many things that we didn't put in. Like what you saw in the film, it can break your heart, but then multiply it by 50, you know, and that's what happened. I mean, even stuff like the lawyers that are screwing up, I mean, you might see two of them. Carl went through probably 12 of them that he would continue to raise money, pay the big-time lawyer. They would go and screw it up. So, okay, he has to go back. He raises money again, pays it, and that just kept happening.
I mean, you talk about raising door-to-door in a community.
And real money, right. Because if you don't have real money, you don't have adequate representation in court. So they had to – it was thousands of dollars that he just kept raising.
And just keep getting taken advantage of.
Yeah. Kept getting taken advantage of until he finally saw someone that was like – they didn't even have an office. You know, they just lived out of their home and said, I'll do it for free. Let me see what I can do.
Colin, this story to many people who will be listening in the Chicago area right now is one that we hear enough about. We hear it on the news where someone is exonerated for a crime they didn't commit and then they recognize that there was faulty evidence or in many cases false confessions and police misconduct. Being able to hear your story here right now, when you know that people are familiar with it, they know what happened. Why do you think it happens? What is it about our system that makes this happen again and again, and every 3 months there's going to be someone on the 10 o'clock news telling their story? You have a stat in the movie, I think it was 120,000 or so people are in prison systems right now that didn't commit the crime. Why do you think that is? What is it about the justice system that works that way?
Well, I believe the citizens of America are allowing it to happen. I mean, as voters, as taxpayers, we have to hold these public officials to higher standards, to the point where they are subject to penalties once they violate their oath. Right now, there's no penalties for a prosecutor who, in reality, is committing a crime on another human being.
Right?
Not the job of the prosecutor is not only to convict the guilty, but also to set aside the innocent, set free the innocent, because not all police work that comes to the DA's office is right and exact. So in that context, police dropped the ball, the DA dropped the ball, even the judge dropped the ball, because nobody at that time wanted to stand up and say, listen, stop the suckers.
And then the film, this is the film, and it's, you know, this is your story. You go to the lengths to talk about or to explore or to show us how the system kind of works at the beginning. You know, they had the guy. You know, they had the guy who did it, but they're still like, well, we don't want to admit, or I don't know what that was, but the idea that let's go ahead and put Colin on it too. Even though you guys didn't know each other or anything like that, they
didn't want to admit the mistake. You know, a lot of times, or you feel the pressure to just convict instead of actually finding the truth. And that's kind of what they were involved in. And it turned into a mess. And then you really don't want to admit the mistake. So you just keep going. And still, to this day, no apology, you know, nothing said to come, you know.
Do you hold that? You said you forgive everybody involved. Do you wish for an apology? Do you wish for...
An apology is not going to do me anything, right? Listen, we have to keep fighting as a people. We all go through different journeys. And I tell people, you don't have to be in prison to get something from this movie, because it's prison and it's freedom. Mm-hmm. Right? Mm. I told you cannot tell my story without telling Carl King's story. Right? So this is a movie about strength, conviction, never giving up, right? Loving each other. We are moving away from loving each other, because at one time in our lives, we are going to need help. And if you're not helping somebody, don't expect to get any help, plain and simple.
My last question, Colin, just is about, you know, as you go on the tour from city to city and you talk about, and, you know, more and more people are interested in your story. Is it hard to look back? Is it hard to do these interviews and think about the time that you spent, the 21 years you spent in prison for a crime you did not commit?
Yes, it's hard. It's very hard. I live with it every day. My speaking out is the voice of those who are unheard. There are thousands of them. I would like this movie to give them encouragement, their families encouragement, because we do need help on the outside while we're inside. So, with hope, all is not lost. Keep fighting, because if you don't fight, everything will remain the same. As far as rehabilitation, rehabilitation is connected with prison. I don't see no rehabilitation in prison. You can rehabilitate yourself in a bathroom. That is you checking on yourself, what is wrong, what is right, and changing it if you feel it's changed, right? So again, listen, fellas, ladies, because there's a lot of women in prison too right now. The numbers are coming closer to the men, right? We are not perfect. We make mistakes. But for those who are unjustly incarcerated, my advice is to form a network in prison from family members, friends, and y'all work together for one cause. That's the only way it's going to happen.
The new film is called Crown Heights. It's just opened in select theaters around Chicago. It won the top prize for drama at this year's Sundance Film Festival. It's the true story of Colin Warner, who spent 21 years of his life in prison for a murder he did not commit. Colin Warner in studio tonight at the Big Table, along with Namdi Asomugha, who also plays Carl in the film, and he also is a producer. Namdi, Colin, thanks so much for sharing your story, and congrats on the film.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Crown Heights is in select theaters now. I'd go say I really enjoyed it. I got to say, you know, a lot of times we'll do these interviews and get a chance to talk to these people come through based on whatever their music or art or whatever. And I think it's all top notch. But rarely am I like, you go see a movie. I really thought this was good. It was a simple story. One that far too often happens here in Chicago. We see that already playing out in the front page of the Trib today, or at least online, about Chicagoan who's suing the city after eyewitnesses recanted their story that pointed this man for a crime that he didn't commit. It happens far too often. But glad that... I mean, I kind of want to say glad it worked out, but you can't even say that, 21 years. The thing, and we talked about in the interview, but the thing that really gets me is that the system is set up that to get out of prison, you need to prove that you've been rehabilitated. And part of the rehabilitation process is to show remorse or forgiveness or beg for forgiveness for the crime you committed. So it's a knock against Colin that he goes in and says, I didn't commit this murder. And they're like, you have not been rehabilitated. No, on parole. I mean, what do you do in that situation? Regardless of, I mean, a high percentage of us are never going to be in that situation. But try to put yourself in those shoes and say, what would you do? If you knew you did not commit the crime, you were not there. This was a frame job, not in any sort of nefarious, just a way that they just wanted to shuffle paperwork along. They don't care. What do you do? Do you just say, hey, I did it? Yeah, I did it. So you can get out of jail and move on with your life? Or do you say, no, I didn't do it? And face the fact that they're never going to let you out of prison because you have not been rehabilitated. And that's, I mean, I'll tell this story. You know, I think a lot of Chicagoans probably have similar stories. Where one time, this is a long time ago, I was mugged on a side street in Chicago. And, you know, dealing with the police after the fact, the idea was, okay, you got to come down. We got to talk to detectives, things like that. And it was a mugging. And they took like $3 on my cell phone. It wasn't like, you know, I can understand why it was small potatoes to this.
Was there a weapon of some
sort?
Yeah,
there was a weapon. There was a gun, right? Not my gun. His gun. So anyway, I come down there. And they say, hey, come on down. I think we got a lineup. We want to show you some guys. They show me this book. And I'm like, I don't know. And they're like, okay, well, take a look here. We got a lineup. Here are the five guys, right? Scary situation to be in because you're like, okay, they can't see you. None of the guys, right? So I go, none. Sorry. They don't even have the body type. And I only saw half the guy's face. He was kind of covered. And they're like, well, you know, I mean, could it be one of these guys? And I was like, no, I can't. It's like, no, I get what's happening, but I can't do that. And he's like, you know, he pulls me to a side and he's just like, well, you know, this one guy did. I mean, he was in the area and, you know, this is the guy. I mean, I got other people saying this is the guy. You know, he pistol whipped somebody. You know, can you imagine that? Pistol whipped this old woman. He did that. Like sort of like just wanting me to go along with it. And I say, hey, man, I'm not trying to get in the way. I'm not like, you know, a guy's like, I'm going to whistle blow. You know, I was just like, I'm just not comfortable with saying somebody did it. They didn't do it. So they let me go and they were kind of mad. They were mad at me. And when I came back, or they called me not too long ago, hey, all right, we got the guy. So I come in. It turns out the guy that they were trying to get me to say was a partner with the guy who did it. And so that's how it kind of wrapped up. But and we sat down. It was funny because you sat down like in the waiting room and there were 12 people in the waiting room that all had the same story of how it kind of went down. But they all were in the same vicinity and they all got jumped by these same two guys. So one guy would jump out and the other guy would jump in, you know, like that kind of thing. And so when I went back in and I saw it, I'm like, oh, that's the guy. But I was like, can you believe that? I mean, could you believe that you'd be in a situation where there'd be any sort of coercion in that kind of situation? We know it to be black and white. This is the justice. This is how it's supposed to work. Yeah, of course you can. And when you watch this movie, I mean, I had a little bit of PTSD to be like, damn, man, I know exactly when they show what they're doing to the people. This is similar if I didn't actually stop and say, no, we ain't doing that. You know? And again, like in any position where I'm, you know, telling this story to admonish or, you know, that there's a big difference between this is the guy who did it, you better say that he did this, and the sort of trying to persuade me to do so. I mean, both are bad, but so, I mean, I get it. And that probably happens. And when you see the fact they put the numbers up on the screen, there's 120,000 people in the prison system right now that did not do the crime that they were convicted for. That's a problem that no one wants to talk about. We have a system that is, you know, and in the movie, which is the craziest part is, and they kind of talk about it a little bit in the interview, but is that they recognize it. They get to a certain point where the prosecution recognizes they got the wrong guy and they get the right guy. But because, and I don't know how accurate this is, if it's for sensational or just, but because they don't want to admit guilt that they held this guy for now 3 months or whatever, they said, well, he was a driver. And the guy's like, no, I wasn't. I don't even know this guy. And they're like, be quiet. And so the jury's like, yeah, you both did it together. One was a driver and the other one was that's how they got him. Crown Heights, the movie, select theaters. Interesting. All right, coming up 10 o'clock, we're going to play the worst, 312-981-7200. Two of the ensemble members of the Cates will be in studio tonight. Pete, you had a vacation as well. You went down south, did a little road trip.
Yeah, a little trip. I went to Nashville and Louisville.
Louisville?
Oh, a 502.
It's old. The proper way to say Louisville is Louisville.
Oh.
How was it? Nashville's great, isn't it?
Oh, beautiful.
Is that your
both.
First time?
No, I've been there before, yeah. Unfortunately, we, you know, I hate to complain about weather.
Oh, yeah.
It was a little rainy.
Was it the...
I think it was the effects of Harvey, yeah, getting in there.
Well, that's no good. But still, I mean, it's a good
great cities, yeah.
What'd you eat in Nashville?
Nashville, well, actually, it was raining so bad that we had dinner reservations at this nice restaurant that they closed because of flooding.
Oh gosh!
Yeah, so
that's
we just,
real deal. Right?
Yeah, it was. Yeah, it was. It was. It's,
I thought it was like a light drizzle.
No, it was like raining really hard from pretty much the time we got there, like Wednesday to Friday.
Yeah,
the whole time. It was. Yeah, it was a
that's
lot of rain.
Nashville for your money back.
So we went to a nice vegan restaurant.
Oh, that's right. You're not going to dig. You
we're not digging in the hot chicken and things like that. No.
The Hattie B's.
No.
So good. I know. I'm going to Nashville next month.
Nice.
My cousin Zach's getting married. I know. And I'm trying to figure it out because we're road tripping in with my parents, and I'm trying to figure out how do we – we're staying in – I think it's called Murfreesboro, which is close by. That's where the wedding's at. It's like a farm town kind of thing. So it's maybe like 30, 40 minutes outside of Nashville. So I'm trying to figure out how to mobilize everybody to go to Nashville for a day and still be in wedding festivities in Murfreesboro.
Yeah, you could do it.
Yeah, right?
Yeah. The thing that, like, so we drove because we're going to Louisville and we're visiting friends and stuff. The thing about Nashville and our schedule is that since we work Friday nights, it's like a little bit too long to drive there in a
like for
a weekend,
yeah, right.
you need to take Friday and then Saturday. Like you can't leave on a Saturday,
yeah,
stay for a day and come back on Sunday. It's just a little bit too long for a road trip drive for one weekend, I think. But it's awesome.
Well, that's a bummer it rained, buddy. How was Louisville raining too? No? Yeah? Oh, man. Yeah. Next time.
Remind me not to go on vacation with Pete.
I know. He brings it with him. He's like the Charlie Brown character.
For the longest time, we've had... For the longest time, everywhere we went on vacation, it would rain. No matter, places that we hadn't had rain in years. We go to the desert. Could you believe it? It's raining for the first time in 27 years.
Man.
Now I'll hang out with Pete. I mean, I'll go out and drink with Pete. I like Pete a lot.
Right.
I'm just not going to go on vacation with him.
That's no good, man. Sorry about the rain. Thanks, Rob. It's Download here at 720 WGN. I'm Justin Coffin. Time to play the worst. It's the worst things in society. We complain about the worst things in society for prizes, and we've got good ones. We've got unique ones tonight, Pete. We have a 3-month semi-private training membership, including unlimited training every day and an athletic evaluation at Redline Athletics in Buffalo Grove. What?
Wow.
That's awesome. That's like a 3-month semi-private training membership. There's so many questions I have right off the bat about that, but that's great. I want that. Why didn't I get that?
I'm sure you could.
Yes.
Come up with something.
I got stuff to do. Also, there's a play at the McKinnich Arts Center in Glen Ellen. Also, it's Lou Malnati's. We've got a lot of stuff. 312-981-7200. We will give away prizes to the best worsts of the night. In studio tonight, our panel. And I'm very excited to welcome two newbies to the worst. Denise Medina is one of the cast members for the Cates Ensemble, a great comedy ensemble here in Chicago, stand-up comedians. They're going to be at the Improv in Schaumburg. That's a big deal.
Yes.
On October 12th, 7:30 p.m. They also got Cates U classes, the big classes to learn how to do stand-up comedy. You can get all that stuff at thecates.org. Denise, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me. I'm so excited.
All right. And also, Janice Rodriguez, she is the producer at Los Locos Comedy. She's which is this Saturday, right?
Yeah.
This Saturday, 8 p.m. at Karen Marie Salon in Bucktown. You can go to loslocoscomedy.com. Janice, good to see you. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
All right. We psyched. You ready to go?
We're ready.
All right. Let's do it. 312-981-7200. Let's start, as we do every week, with Pete Zimmerman. Pete, what do you got for the worst?
You know what's the worst?
What's the worst?
The book selection at these little free libraries. Are you familiar with these little libraries that are sprinkling your neighborhood?
Yeah, right, the little kiosk type
things? Yeah, where, you know, you put a box up and throw your old junk in there.
Right, right.
Have you ever looked in one of these? They're like terrible. You got the no spin zone and erotic novel. It's like
what do you expect? Then make it better for your
neighbor. I was looking for like the Samantha Irby book.
Right, that's not there.
No.
All right, well.
Up your game, little free library.
Free library. All right, that's a good one. 312-981-7200. All right, Denise, you want to start us off? What do you got for the worst?
Oh, what do I have for the worst?
Yeah.
I'm going blank, but I have a lot of worse things. When you're the last person to use the car,
mm-hmm.
and actually, when the last person to use the car leaves it on empty, and then you go to drive, and you're in a hurry, and you have no gas, and you have to stop, and
that's so
you're
going to
be late.
Yeah.
Usually, I'm the one that does that to my husband, so that's how I know about this.
Denise, I thank you entirely because I figured out what I've been saying for the last 3 hours. I'm saying I had a great worst from vacation, and I couldn't remember it, and you just jogged my memory.
Yeah.
No, but it's car related. The worst is when gas stations give the price with the car wash.
Ooh.
And that's becoming the trend, like the idea that it's $2.50, you know, and then they have the little thing that says with car wash. The idea that like gas station trickery is the worst.
Yeah.
That's the worst. Like, come on, really? Are we in a game in 2017 where you got to trick us?
Yeah.
It's gas.
Yeah, that's right. That's not a good thing.
It gets me mad. Yeah. I just get mad about that. That happened. I'm rarely have I ever been tricked by that.
And you can't get away from that.
Yeah, and it's now the Shells are doing it. It used to be just like kind of like one gas company's thing, like a Mobil, where you're like, all those Mobil guys, they're different. Now Shell's like, we're going to do it too. And you're like, no.
They open the door.
They open the door, right?
That's it.
I get so angry about that.
And it's all small print.
Yeah, it's $2.77.
It's too late.
Across the board.
You already have the pump in the car.
And like,
can't
what's your
turn
option?
Around. Yeah,
you know?
That's it.
What are you going to do? Are you going
to
take the bus?
It always gets me for just a second where I'm driving. I go, $2.53?
What a deal.
It's so cheap out of wait a second. And they got
Lies.
Me. They get me.
They get all you every time.
All right, Janice, what do you got for the worst? What do you got, one?
The worst is when couples sit next to each other on the same side of the booth.
God, I hate
that. That's bad. That's bad.
That's the worst.
It is the worst. What's going on there? I mean, I get it in some cases. If I guess I've done that.
Have you?
I feel like I've done it, but it's always been because it's like this is just a better scenario for what we like. If it's small plates or maybe it's booze, I can't remember what it is. There's one scenario that works.
Yeah, trying to make out at the table.
Yeah,
that's not the scenario.
I don't see where that would work. Yeah, that's just right? You're just out to prove a point. You're just trying to show everybody, oh, look at us, we're so cute, we're so together, we're so.
No, I think it's more that
he's all those, like it's the tablas.
No, it's the
I don't know if I believe you.
It's the elongated rustic table.
Right, that's
there.
That's the restaurant's like, we got this from a cool shop out in the woods.
Yeah.
Here it is. It's a cool table, and you're like, it's not. And now I'm all the way across the way, so like you end up staying on the same side.
So can I add to that? Yes,
yeah.
Communal seating is also the worst.
Oh, especially when they're like these two, and you're just like, it's right in the middle of everybody. And you're kind of going thigh to thigh on somebody. It's I don't like that. Yeah.
It's always like a pricey restaurant, a special evening. You're like, thank you.
If I wanted that, I'd eat on the L.
Right.
Right?
Oh, man.
This is a good one. 3708 says, staying on the gas station trickery. Can we just drop the stupid 0.9 cents?
Yeah. What's
like, where are we at? He's so right. Rob, you might be a winner on that one. Well, where are we at? It's 2017. We have that much disdain for the people that we're going to like, you know what? Let's make it, let's put a 0.9 on there.
Like, we're not going to know.
Yeah.
We're not going to know.
Like, I feel like at what point is there like a gas station constitutional convention where they all get together and they're like, you know what? This worked in the late 70s. Doesn't work anymore. Everybody's onto us. Let's just get rid of the car wash and a 0.9 cent.
It makes you wonder what else they're pulling on you know?
Yeah. Yeah,
yeah,
exactly.
We have to look into this.
See, we're on the same page.
We're doing it.
All right, 312-981-7200. We got worse that are coming in. Text, you can call as well. We will continue the worst right after our break. Stay with us.
It's going down,
y'all. All right, playing the worst here, 312-981-7200. Denise Medina and Janice Rodriguez in studio tonight. We are picking your worsts. The best worsts are going to get a prize. And we got some cool prizes, too. All right, let's go to the phones. Let's go to Beth. Beth, what's the worst, Beth?
Toilet training a toddler. Yeah. It's bad when they do it, and it's bad when they don't do it.
Yeah.
Okay, so explain. Like, you just had a bad experience with it?
It's bad when they do it in the diaper, and it's bad when they don't.
Right. I'm trying to remember. My son's older now, and I'm trying to remember. Like, I feel like I've blocked it out. I feel like there was a fake toilet you put on the right. There's a fake toilet you put on the real toilet, that kind of thing.
Yeah. Well, no. Then there's a little potty that they can sit on the floor, and then you have to clean it out.
More work, extra work.
I'm more interested. I mean, I like that one a lot, but I'm also interested. I saw a video that says you can train your cat to go in the toilet.
No way.
Yeah, it's the whole thing. There's like a video you can order and the whole thing to like train your cat to go in the toilet. And I'm like, that's amazing. That would save so much money,
so much
in the environment, so much all that kind of stuff. So
unless you have a picky cat who's like, this isn't clean enough. I'm not going in there.
Will they teach the cat how to flush?
That was my next question. I
would be okay if the cat, it didn't flush, and it'd be like, geez, and then you'd flush. You'd be like, it's better than anyone.
Scooping,
do you have
right?
cats? I mean, Pete's got a cat, so it's like, yeah, it's the kitty litter thing is it's kind of a disaster. It's always a disaster.
Yeah, it is.
There's just a lot going on.
Yeah. I don't have a cat anymore, but yeah, you're right. It was a disaster. Yeah.
If there was a video and it was an easy thing to do to train your cat to use the toilet, you would do it in a heartbeat.
Yeah, I would. Yeah. I would share that video with everyone, and then I would teach people how to train their cat.
You're going out business.
I would.
Yeah, entrepreneur here. Yeah, no, I have no cats and no kids, so I can barely handle my own poop. So you guys just keep this discussion. I'm going to step away.
708 says the worst are people who bring bikes and strollers on the L.
Isn't there a limit on how many bikes you can bring? Like, I always worry, I'd like to do that, but then what if I'm the bike where they're like, no, we have enough.
The bike space is taken.
Yeah, then what do I do? I've got like an hour drive on the train, so what do I do? Just like wait?
Yeah, and I just don't feel too comfortable like on the bus where they put it on the front of the bus. Yeah. I just feel like that's just the inevitably what's going to happen is the bike's going to fall and the bus is going to run over it.
Right.
Right?
And what about divvy bikes? Can you put the divvy bike on the bus?
I don't know.
You ever seen that?
I haven't seen that.
Do people do that?
I think because of the slant. I don't think.
I don't know.
Let's look into it.
We'll have to check it out.
Jeff from Crystal Lake says the worst is the Cook County sweet drink tax. What's next? Salt tax? Yes.
Yes.
That's next. That is an interesting story. Not for the worst, but just they're ramping it up on both sides. They're putting more money into ads.
I just saw one today.
Yeah, ads on both sides. Bloomberg's putting money in. Bloomberg, the former mayor of New York, this is his big pet project.
Oh, yeah.
He goes out of his way to explain why it is important to have a tax on soda because soda causes obesity.
But does that make people stop drinking soda?
I don't know.
It just makes people mad.
Yeah. And drink more soda.
Yeah, but maybe.
But then they put vodka in the soda.
Maybe you're so mad that you forgot to drink that Diet Coke, so it all works out.
I don't know.
That Dr. Pepper. All right, 630 says the worst is being shamed at a gas station for trying to fill my own tank in a rental car in Jersey. Because it's not allowed in Jersey. In Jersey, it's full service only.
Oh.
I don't believe that. Is that true? I mean, I think maybe it is. I mean, this person knows better now.
But I didn't know it was maybe the town they were in.
Yeah,
I don't think it's like a state thing.
Maybe it is.
Well, what if you're kind of a helper and you just want to like do your own thing and you're kind of like helping out, you know? How is that being shamed? That's just wrong. That is the worst.
Let's go to Glenn. Glenn, what's the worst, Glenn?
The worst is buying something at one of the Oasis at $2.94 and finding out why it's half price. I bought some hard-boiled eggs that were half off. And they weren't too good.
You're buying at the Tollway Oasis a hard-boiled egg at half price?
No.
That's awesome.
They were half price off. I figured, I'll save a couple of them.
Glenn, are you kidding me, man? That's awesome.
There's tons of red flags here. Tons of red flags.
They were terrible. They had a slime to it.
Oh.
Oh, gosh.
Can we talk about cat poop again?
Len, that's awesome. That's the best.
That's like buying, what's that Japanese food? Sushi.
Right.
At a gas station.
No, what you did was worse. You bought a hard-boiled egg at half price, so they already knew that there was something wrong with the egg, at a tollway oasis.
Hey, I'm pretty awesome. Cheap. What can
That's
I say?
Pretty awesome, Glenn. That might take the cake.
You must have really been hungry.
You're in the running, buddy. Yeah. Thanks, Glenn.
You're welcome.
That's just awesome. What is that?
Of all the things when you're hungry,
why would you do that?
You could get a candy bar. You could get
chips. With preservatives in there.
There's a lot of garbage you can get at those places. But to be like, oh, the eggs are half off.
I'm going
to
be healthy today. No, you're going to be dead tomorrow if you eat this. It's pretty bad.
That's awesome.
The eggs are really healthy. They're delicious. But
it's just the slime that'll kill you.
I love it. I just the thought process. Rolling into the oasis, being like,
What time was this? What did he say? What time was this? Was it like 1:30 in the morning or something?
First of all, I love the fact that any place that sells eggs is like, you know what? Before we throw it out, half price.
We're not worried about
a red sticker on it.
Just see what happens.
They're not worried about lawsuits from salmonella or E. coli or anything like that.
Any sort of produce or perishable that goes to half price, you got to wonder why.
It could have been worse though. It could have been cheese, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, but again, like if you half price cheese, you would question that, wouldn't you?
Red flags, guys. Red flags.
Any sort of dairy, you would question a half price, like a clearance.
The clearance section of
a clearance
eggs.
Tag on a dairy product is not a good idea.
Yeah, not a good
That's
idea.
Awesome.
I have had the Walgreens sushi, I have to admit.
Well, the Walgreens across the street, that's a go-to.
Right. Yeah. Some of them have, like, food, like real food. Yeah. I have had the sushi.
Was it good?
It was. I mean, I didn't die. I'm here.
All right. There you go. 6312 says the worst is guy liner, male eyeliner.
Unless you're a rock star.
Yeah, well, who else is doing it? It's a dress-up thing. Are people putting guy liner on just to hang?
I don't know.
Not anybody to hang out with, but, you know.
Maybe it's coming back. Well, Halloween's coming, so maybe. I don't know.
6Rio says the worst is anybody who buys a hard-boiled egg.
Yeah.
No, I don't agree with that. I would eat, if I see a hard-boiled egg on a menu, like at a breakfast place, I'm like, let's double down on that one. I want to try it out. I like the one. Yeah, I like that.
Well, I'll get them from Starbucks in the little protein packs that they have in the morning. Yeah, that's a good breakfast.
Another one, though. You're buying an egg out of a Starbucks.
But they come pre-packed, and they're in the refrigerator with all the pretty fruits. And
there's no
half-off
stickers, so you feel like it's safe.
Yeah, there's no half-off. You're probably paying a lot.
312 says, Pacers at the bus stop. Pick a spot and marry it. You're making me edgy.
Pacers. What do they mean?
They mean like someone walking back and forth. Like somebody's just like too antsy, checking their phone, walking around.
They should just keep walking. That's not like get to one. Where they need
to
go.
It's not going to come any sooner, so just meditate. Just calm down.
All that walking, they could get to where they need to go probably. Right? They just go.
Yeah.
Stressing me out.
Get a skateboard or a scooter or something.
Yeah, now here come all the texts that say state law in New Jersey, you cannot pump your own gas, any gas station.
Man, we learn something new every day.
Didn't know that.
NJ, Garden State.
There you go. All right, 312-981-7200. so many references to the hard-boiled egg that are coming in. 630 says the worst is any pet in a stroller. Yeah, I agree.
Especially if it's in a little outfit.
Yeah.
You know, maybe a little pacifier or something. I don't know.
Somebody tricked me. We went to go bend over and like say, your baby. And it was a dog. Uh-huh. And I started laughing so loud. Like, I couldn't help myself. We were, like, mortified and just... And the lady was, like, offended and the husband was embarrassed. And I'm like, you let her do... Like, oh.
Well, unless it's a little kid, then I think that's cute.
Right.
If you see a little girl or a little boy pushing their pet in a stroller, it's like, oh.
No, this was a grown woman. This is, like, a grandma.
Well. Yeah.
I'm kind of... Yeah. I feel like...
I felt sad. It was a little sad.
Well, maybe she just couldn't carry the animal. I don't know.
All right, 312-981-7200. We keep going here.
It was like a teacup. It was like 2 pounds.
847 says the worst is when you see every other driver on the road holding their cell phone. Hashtag sad. Hashtag on a text. Good job.
I love it.
That's true. And then
like they're holding it, like they're talking on it, or are they just holding it?
I assume they're holding it, like texting and things like that.
Yeah, texting and driving. People are doing it all the time. Yeah,
yeah, that is.
And then I'm probably going to be the one getting into the accident because I'm watching everybody do this. Hey, you, stop. Put your phone down.
It's a gaper's text delay.
Oh, I know.
You guys should cover that in traffic.
Yeah.
All right, here we go. The worst is being blamed for something you didn't do wrong, like a restaurant blaming a food delivery person for an incomplete delivery.
That's very specific.
Delivery people shouldn't
right
open
there.
It's also, I don't want to make a big deal about it, but we just had in the last hour a guy who was put in jail for a murder he did not commit for 21 years. Oh. So the idea of the worst being blamed for something you didn't do wrong, like a restaurant blaming a food delivery person for the contrast.
Yeah. We'll have to.
It's okay. You'll get your tip next time. It's fine. Attention.
Yeah, and then 708 says, keep in mind and don't judge the poor guy buying at the Oasis. Us truck drivers don't have many choices. We can't fit through the late night drive through windows.
Mm. Which are also a healthy choice.
Yeah, I guess. You can't pump your own gas in Oregon either.
Oh. Yeah. Let's start a list
many
here.
Things, I know.
Yeah.
By the end, we're going to have it all mapped out for us.
I wish there was a law that said you can't clean your own house. Like, that would be really nice. I would like that.
That would be good.
Let's work on that.
815, this one right before we go to news. The worst is dog owners that refer to themselves as mommy or daddy.
Hey, now. I am a mama of dogs.
Do you say
I'm a dog mom.
Do you say mommy?
No, I don't.
Do you say dog mom?
Dog mom. I'm a dog mom. No, I really don't.
Pete, someone says I'm their daddy?
No.
That's extra creepy.
No, I don't think so.
No, I don't think so.
I think I've been called.
It might be different to be like, is that here? Yeah, but.
Like I'm not walking our dogs and.
Yeah.
Take that a step further.
Yeah.
And celebrate the grandparents of dog parents.
Yeah.
You know, they like get like freaking birthday cards and they got the bumper sticker on.
Pet Grandparents Day.
Yeah.
Right.
I'm a proud grandparent of a Labrador. That's great. Good for you.
All right, we're playing the worst tonight. 312-981-7200. We get the second half coming up here after the news. Dave's on the line. We got people texting in.
What's going down?
Thanks, Rob. It's a download here on 720 WGN. Justin Kaufman here. 312-981-7200. We're playing the worst, where we complain about the worst things in society. Four prizes. We got some fun stuff. 3 month semi-private training membership to Redline Athletics in Buffalo Grove. We got a pair of tickets to The 39 Steps, which is a Alfred Hitchcock play at the Mac Center in Glen Ellen. And also Lou Malnati's gift certificates. All that to give away tonight for the top three worsts. In studio, our panel tonight, Denise Medina. She's part of the cast member with the Cates, which will be at the Improv in Schaumburg on October 12th. It's at 7:30. Also, the Cates University.
Yeah.
Classes start back up. You can find out all that information at thecates.org. Also, Janice Rodriguez in studio. She is the producer of Las Locas Comedy, which is on stage this Saturday, 8 p.m. at Karen Marie Salon in Bucktown, laslocascomedy.com. All right. We got to the second half of the worst. 312-981-7200. Let's go to Dave. Dave, what's the worst, Dave?
Hey, Justin.
Hey,
people who clip their nails in public.
Oh, that's gross.
You know, I mean, this was on the red line.
No.
It's happened to me before.
What?
I'm sitting down reading a magazine, and you just know that familiar, you know, snapping, clipping noise.
I can't believe that.
And you've heard it before, and they're, you know... They're just, you can't tell these people anything because they're usually disturbed. Anyone who does that in public,
right.
You know, and the nails flying left and right, they don't care. And, you know, especially if you're sitting right next to them and you got food or something. And,
oh, that's so gross.
You know that noise.
Yeah.
This it's so familiar sounding, but they'll do it anywhere in the... Dentist office.
Dentist office.
Yeah, like, what's the hurry?
Great.
Like, why?
Public
why can't
park.
You?
Which I guess it's okay if there's some distance between them.
No, it's not okay.
It's never okay. It's a private thing. Do that at home.
Bathroom.
Bathroom.
Well, yeah, ideally, but, you know, we gotta deal with the world and the people that live in it.
Yeah, I guess you're right. All right, thanks, Dave. That's a good one.
Familiar sounding noise. It can be anywhere, and you're like, oh, no. Well, who's that, you know?
You know what's up, yeah. Right.
Yeah, okay. All right, thanks, buddy. Take care, everybody. Bye.
He's right about it. You don't know what they're going to do either. I remember one time I was living in my in Ravenswood, and I was sitting up on the third floor. I think I've told this story before, but sitting up on the third floor, and I was out my window just kind of observing the neighborhood and these two guys kind of looking around, and they decide they're going to pee.
Like right there.
Right there on the sidewalk / alleyway, right? And I just go, hey, what are you doing? And the reaction is so priceless. Instead of them like zipping up and running or being like ashamed, they didn't, I mean, barely zipped up, and they just pointed up and they go, how do we get up there? Let's kick this guy's butt. They went to the door downstairs and they started rattling it and pointing at me like, how dare you interrupt our public pee? And I was just like, what happened here? How'd they get so aggressive?
How did you turn into the bad guy here?
I know. It was a bad,
who knew Ravenswood was so rough?
It was rough. It was so fun. They were so like, street up they there. Were so cartoonish. They were just like, we're going to get you. Like, how dare you tell us
they
anything?
They shook their hand.
Well, tell us what to do.
Right, so
man, at least you guys can.
Right.
The beauty of being a man.
All right, here we go. This is a good one. 815. Yeah, right?
Anyway.
It would have been a better story if it was a woman who was doing that and then got mad. Oh, how dare you tell me to stop?
Yeah.
How dare you?
Buzz me up.
815 says, the worst is when you're a server at a restaurant and your customer, quote, accidentally takes the signed copy of the credit card slip with them. All you can do is close the checkout to the amount of the sale, and any tip that was supposed to be given is now null and void. Ooh, that is a great worst.
Oh,
if that's
bad.
Your job and that's a deal and you just, and someone, I mean, she says accidentally like in quotes, but is that a scam?
Accidentally on purpose. I've heard that from people. That's why you should tip in cash if you can.
I don't know. Maybe people are just confused. Do they really not know that they're taking the wrong copy?
Yeah, I mean, I would think like you go through, that's a lot of work to fake a scam.
Yeah, and then what if you want to, I mean, you want to eat there again, right? Now you can't come back because people are.
Well, they didn't, I mean, the idea that you would fill it out and sign it and do the whole thing like, here it is, and then be like, and I'm going to take it too. That's too much work. Just don't do any of the work and leave.
Yeah, that sounds like a mistake.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, oftentimes I'll run into that. You'll be at a restaurant and you're like, which one's the merchant copy? Which one's the customer? You know, it's like it's confusing.
I need my reading glasses. I can't see.
Right. Yeah. Sometimes I'll put the customer copy on top on X, you know, or the merchant copy. You know, I don't know. It's like
too much paper. I'm at the point now where I just don't even take any of it. You sign something and I walk out the door and I'm like, just fleece me.
I know, and they give you like four receipts now. They give you the one copy, then a make a copy, then one just an extra that's sitting there.
Listen to us giving people the benefit of the doubt.
I know,
this
we're
is the
so
worst.
Positive. Listen to us. Let's be negative, guys.
Yeah, exactly. All right. 608 says the worst side effects described with each new miracle drug will change your life. Caution, side effects may include loss of balance, psychosis, vertigo, heart attack, kidney and liver failure, impotence, and or sudden death.
Well, I'll take my chances with the whatever it is that ails me.
There was one I saw a commercial just the other day, and I just caught the tail end of it. It was like, I think it was on Hulu, because it was one of those that like I just was seeing the little round ad in the corner. And it was one, I don't even know what it was for, but the side effects was like a Saturday Night Live skit. It was like paralysis, possible coma. Like, it said possible coma.
Oh, my
God. And
it's
like, call your doctor immediately. You're like, I'm in a coma. How do I call? Like, I don't know.
Oh, no. How does that work?
But it does help with my gout.
My gout, right. Just keep the swollen joints. It's fine, guys.
Jeez. Anyway. Yeah. All right. 312-981-7200. More on, you know, it's illegal to pump gas. Got it?
Again.
All right. We got it. Worse, people driving with a pet in their lap. Yes.
Oh.
I like when the dog gets out the window while the person's driving.
Oh, I don't like being behind people who do that because I'm afraid that the dog is going to fall out and I'm going to run him over and it's going to be traumatic.
Yeah, see, that's, you and I, we're seeing how we're different as humans because my interpretation of that is I'm afraid that dog's going to like jump down by the feet and mess up the controls of the car.
And we're all going to die.
And we're
still
all
going
to
die, yeah.
I'm not too concerned about the dog.
Dog safety.
I'm more about the dog's effect on the driver.
Well, I mean, who are these people? Are they like evil villains, you know?
No,
petting the cat on their lap while they're driving? I mean,
They can't wait for a little bit.
Who do they think they are? CeeLo Green and The Voice? What is this?
That's ridiculous. I don't know. When was the last time he was on The Voice?
I don't know.
Yeah, that's a good reference.
That's probably the last time.
That's old school. I like that.
That's probably the last time I watched it. There we go. You know.
I had a friend who rode an elevator with CeeLo Green. That's all I got. like at one of the New York like hotels where it was like 70 floors.
Oh,
so
wow.
It was just a quiet 70 floors with CeeLo Green.
I'm a fan. Don't turn around. Can I pet your cat?
847 says the worst is finding a blow-up doll in your deceased grandmother's closet while cleaning out her estate. Mm.
That's not the worst. That's the best.
Oh,
I think that'd be great. Grandma was getting it on.
With a blow-up doll.
Maybe she had parties. Who knows?
Oh, God.
She could be selling all that stuff.
I have a lot of questions
parties.
About that.
Yeah.
Pictures or didn't happen. I need proof.
Keep digging. Maybe you'll find the pictures. Yeah.
Let's go to Chuck. Chuck, what's the worst, Chuck?
How you doing tonight, guys?
Good, man. How about you?
Good. Hanging in there.
Okay.
The great worst for me has got to be when you're at a restaurant and you have, like, a family of four, mm-hmm. and they're all on their cell phones, and the parents are not paying attention to the kids, and the kids are pulling on their cell phones, showing each other different videos or whatever, and it gets more obnoxious when you're sitting next to them.
Ugh, I can imagine. Yep, that's the worst.
Yeah,
thanks, Charlie.
Whatever happened to a family sitting there and having a good conversation and focusing on each other?
What happened to the family sitting there in silence, miserable with each other?
Exactly.
I remember those days.
Thanks, Chuck.
All right, thank you.
I prefer my parents ignored me.
Exactly. That's totally what it is. What happened if we all seethe in our misery together?
And you have to talk to each other. Yeah, no, the phones are actually kind of great, though.
Yeah.
Because you're at mom. Like, the parents love the phones because they're like,
take the phone. Yeah. Leave me alone. Wow. I couldn't get a babysitter. Daddy and I want to have some quiet time together.
Yeah.
Keep it down over there. Yeah.
I do. And I had a funny story where one time I was in a restaurant with my son, and I was on my phone while he was sitting there, and he was doing crayons or something, and a woman walked over and said, you know, you could get off your phone. Like, she pulled that at Wishbone, yeah.
Not her business.
And I was just like, oh, man, I feel like... And her husband was so funny because it was an older woman. And her husband is just like, oh, God. It's Kathy, come on. It's not... You don't have to police the world. Like, that's the vibe he was given. Like, what did I tell you?
Yeah. Stay out of people's business. He just wanted to sit there and do crayons. He's like, please, Kathy, shut up.
I know. I was just like... And I was like, you're right. You're absolutely right. I'm looking at nothing. And I was like, you're right. Thanks, Kathy. 312-981-7200. 810 says people on mass transit who take up a seat for their belongings. Yeah, that says I want to fight you. Yeah. Like, I want to fight you, world. I'm in a fighting mood. If you put your backpack on a seat.
Oh, on your lap.
When you ask them, like, can you move that? And they kind of give you an attitude.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
are you the kind of, are you all the kind of public transit riders who get really aggressive when someone sits on the inside of an aisle and there's an open seat on the window and they're like, excuse me. And you get past the person because you know what they're trying. Like, they'll put their bag on that seat.
To try to save it.
For whatever reason. Yeah, and they'll sit on the aisle so the window seat's open. And you walk up and you're like, excuse me, need to get in there. And you, like, force the issue. Are you guys kind of riders?
I am.
Yeah?
And I, like, put my butt right in their face as I go by.
Excuse me.
Don't even get up. Let me enjoy this.
Yeah. I'll go up to a person. There'll be multiple seats open on the train. And I'll make them move their bag just because I don't like the way they go about their business.
I just don't like you.
Yeah, you're right. So who's looking for the fight? You or the person with the...
I'm not looking for a fight necessarily. I'm teaching you some liminal message.
Watch out, because it could be just like the Ravenswood Piers, where you make, hey, can move this. What? Yeah, get him.
Follow me, then I stop.
That's right. That's right. 312-981-7200, playing the worst. Stay with us.
What's going down,
all right, wrapping up the worst here, 312-981-7200. All right, Denise Medina in studio, Janice Rodriguez, two comedians in town. We'll give the shows they're going to be involved in coming up here in just a second. All right, 708. All right, this is where we get to the, I feel it always gets to like the end of the hour and you get to the more naughty section. It's after dark, right? I feel like we're after dark.
It's almost also 11.
Every kid's in school now, so right. It's like a thing. 708 says the worst is going to work in the morning and finding an empty condom wrapper near my desk.
Oh.
It's terrible. That's terrible.
The cleaning people.
That's terrible.
Yeah. Put that stuff in the garbage, man.
Right.
Yeah, it's the idea like I work, someone will clean that up.
At the minimum.
Rude, right? Or I don't know.
Don't
maybe,
do it.
Maybe don't do it at work.
Right, just saying.
949 says the worst is when your friend doesn't know how to cook and pours cold water on your freshly cooked spaghetti to rinse it.
Oh, yeah.
That's specific.
Super.
Right now, the friend's listening going, oh, was I supposed to do that?
I was trying to be helpful.
I remember one time, this is a long time ago, that I was dating a woman and I thought I'd be really romantic and I'd cook and I'd cook spaghetti and it was just awful. Like, I did a bad job on spaghetti, right? And she came over and she whipped up like this nacho thing that was like awesome and the whole thing. And I was just like, well, I'm 20. Like, it was just the most 20 moment of my life. I'll never forget it. I just remember that being like, wow, those nachos you made were like almost professional.
Yeah.
Like, and what I made was just like, I didn't even cook it right. Like, I didn't even cook
just
pasta right. I made a bad.
With some Prego?
I just made bad pasta.
Mm-hmm. Did you get better? How do you make it now?
Nah, I just stopped doing
I just gave up. And
yeah.
That was it.
Nah, I just rolled
it. Only Olive Garden
yeah,
for
exactly.
you.
518 says vapes. They look so stupid. Like sucking on cutlery. That's good.
That's a good one.
312 says, I helped clean out a late friend's apartment. Disposing the adult toys was breathtaking. Wow. 630 says, when people say milk instead of milk.
Oh, yeah, that's annoying.
I fall into that. That
my
pillow.
Does that,
that
yeah.
My pillow read. There's a couple, you say pillow like 25 times. I said pillow at least four times in that thing.
Or pillar.
That's a whole different thing. Pillow. Milk. Yeah, yeah. The worst, 815 says, people who lick their fingers at the all-you-can-eat buffet.
Oh, that's
who's
disgusting.
Doing that?
And where is there an all-you-can-eat buffet?
I don't know. Right? And if you're watching, then go up and say something to them.
Yeah. But who's doing that?
But
that
who's
doesn't
doing
work
like,
that way
in
anymore.
In the line?
I don't
yeah,
know.
I agree. Because most buffets, you're not grabbing with your hands anymore. Like you grab with like a spoon
yeah,
for the
yeah,
Jello.
The
are you talking about the Jello? Like the like I'm thinking old country buffet.
That's
which
what I'm thinking.
Was
old school.
The best.
I know. But, as I'm saying, where is it? I'm really genuinely.
Yeah, all you can eat pudding.
Oh my
just
God.
Nonstop pudding and Jello.
She can see me. Why am I doing this? I think I'm on TV.
There was a time I remember we were in the middle of Illinois and I was living in Chicago and there was no old country buffets in this area. Mm-hmm. And my friend was from Peoria and he's like, oh, we'll go to the old country buffet. And we walked in that place. I was like, this is the best restaurant in the history of man. The idea that you can go back and get more was all
taters.
New to me. And so I went on a rage for like 2 or 3 years going to wherever there was an old country buffet. I tried to eat there.
But did you call it OCB?
I didn't, but I should have, yeah.
Was that just me? Okay.
We went to a hotel for my wife's birthday, and I thought I had bought a special package that included a kind of access to this club level place where you can go and nice view you know, Lake Michigan, what have you. And we go up there. I'm like, oh, this is great. They have, you know, beer and they have, you know, all sorts of snacks and food. And oh, this is great. You know, like having like 4 beers in like 10 minutes, you know, just because you can. And then you realize it's on the honor system. They had an honor system thing where there was like a sheet at the beginning of the entrance where you write down
what you're gonna eat,
how many drinks, and what
I think
food,
I'll have 4 drinks.
What food you have, and then you turn that in,
oh,
and then they charge you to your room.
So did you try to be? Did you?
I went about half. I went about half.
2 Amstel lights, whatever the Amstel light price was. Is what I was
when
thinking.
Yeah, when you're all up there and you're thinking. And you're getting everything for free,
that's
man.
Crazy.
You're just going. I don't even like nuts. I'm just eating. I'm just shoving them in my mouth.
312.
What hotel was this?
Right. I love the honor system. Oh. This was the late 70s.
Right. Was that it?
Right. All right, let's see. What else? All right, we're almost to the end here. 214 says, binge watching my kids. It's too much. I need a break. Oh, there you go. All right. And then let's see. Okay. This person says, yes, they leave nothing if they filled it out at all. This was, they were talking about the check. And the last one we'll do is the worst is the ubiquitous use of the word amazing. Everything performances to potato salad.
It's amazing.
It's amazing.
I'm guilty.
It's
do you take the A as long as you can?
It's amazing. Yeah,
I do.
Amazing.
Everything's amazing. Yes. Like in one like Instagram post, I used amazing three times. I'm like, okay, stop. I actually went back and had to get off the source.
My crutch is I'll say love it. Like
that's a good one. I like that.
That's my response for email. That's for social media, whatever it is. Love it.
I think I overuse the word awesome. Everything is awesome.
Yeah.
But everything is awesome.
Yeah, it is. But now I love it.
You know what's awesome?
And it's amazing.
Yeah,
and it's
awesome
amazing.
Amazing. The spelling of turquoise.
So specific. I love it. It's so I love it. See, now you got me doing it.
The worst is when you send your husband to buy a washing machine and he buys a dishwasher instead.
Oh.
Come on.
That has to be specific.
That's
then.
Divorce material. That's just right to the Lord.
It reminds me of when I had a friend who had money who was supposed to go buy a snowblower, and instead he came home with a bunch of cats.
That'll happen. I see the logic in that.
Yeah.
I'm following. I'm doing the math on that one. Uh-huh. I think I know how that kind of plays out.
Like you go to the store for one thing and you get something else. Yeah.
All right. Wrapping up here. Denise Medina is part of the Kate's Ensemble. They're going to be at the Improv in Schaumburg, October 12th, 7:30 p.m. You can also get the Kate's U classes. That's U for university. Thekates.org. Janice Rodriguez is the producer of Las Locas Comedy. It's this Saturday, 8 p.m. at Karen Marie Salon in Bucktown. What's the address on that?
1859 North Milwaukee.
Mm.
Go team.
Karen Marie Salon, 1859 Milwaukee.
We turn it into a comedy club.
1859 Milwaukee.
I've seen the transformation.
Oakley in Milwaukee.
Yeah.
You know where Razu is?
I do.
Right across the street.
Yeah. Isn't that not too far from where the teacher's store is at?
Right next door.
Is it right next door?
Yeah. Do you go there for crafts?
I have. No, I went to get like school supplies.
Oh, there
it was
you go.
Fun because it's a cool store.
There you go.
Take my
support
son
small
there.
Business. Yeah.
They have a video online where they transform the salon into a comedy club, and it's amazing.
That's awesome. Yeah. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
All right. So Las Locas is at Karen Marie Salon up on Milwaukee and Bucktown, laslocascomedy.com. All right. Here we go. Top three tonight are going to get number one's going to get the 3-month semi-private training membership, including unlimited training every day and an athletic evaluation at Redline Athletics in Buffalo Grove. Kids can train like a pro athlete using the same Fusionetics science that college and pro sports teams use. Details at redlineathletics.com/Buffalo Grove. Wow. Second's going to get you a pair of tickets to the 39 Steps, playing September 7th through October 8th at the Mack Center in Glen Ellen. Buffalo Theater Ensemble's production, based on Alfred Hitchcock's 1935 thriller, is a fast-paced whodunit farce packed with 50 outrageous characters played by 4 actors, complete with death-defying finale. Get tickets at 630-942-4000 or at themack.org. Or you get a Lou Malnati's gift certificate. Lou Malnati's is home of Chicago's best deep dish pizza. Find one of their 40-plus Chicagoland locations or order online at loumalnati's.com. All right, so third place tonight is going to be on the text. 847, you got the pizza. The worst is finding a blow-up doll in your deceased grandmother's closet while cleaning out her estate. Ooh, all right. Second place tonight is going to go to our main... second place is going to go to Dave. Dave said the people who clip their toenails or any nails in public.
Yes.
Yeah.
That deserves it.
And then first place, I don't think there's any doubting this one. And I can't thank you enough for calling in with it. Glenn is going to get first prize tonight. The worst is buying half off clearance rate hard boiled eggs at the Tollway Oasis. So Glenn's going to win tonight, getting the number one. All right, Denise. Janice, thanks so much for being in. It's great. Can't wait to have you guys back.
I'd love to come back. This is so much fun.
All right, so fun. All right, this is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago, WGNRadio.com. If you're an Amazon Echo user, just say play WGN Radio on TuneIn. We'll be back tomorrow night. We've got a big show tomorrow night. I'm very excited. We have it's a good show. A lot of stuff. The guys, Josh Sigourin's going to be here from Wild Claw. Did I tell you this, Pete? Wild Claw does horror film on stage.
Ooh.
So it's like horror theater.
Wild Claw.
Wild Claw, Josh Sigourin. So he will be on the show tomorrow night and much, much more.
Let's check it out.